Hello, you're listening to the Talking Spirit Anime Cast. My name is Andrew, and I'm joined here with Chris.
Yo.
And we're from the TalkingSpirit.com website, where you can go for all of our anime, new and old, great community forum links at the top, social media links on the right side, and all that good stuff. Today is our winter 2020 first impressions. It's time to let you guys know our thoughts on the shows that are coming out on winter, let you know which ones are penning out for us, which ones are not so much, which ones we're thinking about passing on, possibly. But yes, a lot of shows this season. I was telling Chris, like, do you want to do first impressions this week? Because I kind of want to start choosing which shows we want to stick with, because there's too many shows. Like, our schedule is way too packed with all these shows. Can't keep up with them. We're, like, going through and going, okay, I think I got... Nope, we're not caught up on all of them. So, yes. Are you ready?
I hope so.
Yes, we're going to go through all the shows, let you know the titles of them, where you can possibly find them, one that you can't find anymore, sadly. Give our thoughts on them, tell you about some people working on possibly, and give you a quick synopsis and how they're turning out. But yes, let's start off with Somali and the Forest Spirit, or Somali Tomori no Kamisama. This one is streaming on Crunchyroll. It's due to run for 12 episodes, done by Studio Satellite, based off a web manga. And the genres are adventure, slice of life, and fantasy. And the director for this one is Kenji Yasuda, who did Macross Plus and Shugo Chara. So, pretty solid director on that one. Yes, this one follows a golem named Adosan, father, basically. he's just known as a golem. And basically, in this world, all the forests have spirits in them. Or not really spirits in them. They have, wildlife and everything in them. And some of these forests have what are known as golems, and the golems are basically a caretaker of the forest. They can speak to all the different creatures, and they kind of keep peace within the forest itself. And this particular golem that we follow finds a small human named Somali and takes care of her. And as we're kind of starting off the show, he is trying to escort Somali to find any kind of humans and return her to the human kind, because this entire world seems to be mostly populated by different creatures, wolf people, onis, different kind of mythological creatures. At some point, they kind of explain that humans arrived at some point, but they were kind of mean at some point and started wars, and they were chased off because they're weak. And most of the people that the golem and Somali have run into so far haven't really seen humans in a long, long time. So they're just kind of doing their journey. Kind of the thing that's adding a little bit of drama to it is that we find out really quickly that the golem itself, most golems only survive for, was it 1,000 years?
1,000 years, yeah.
And he is like a little bit over a year left on that whole timeline, so he is decaying. And even though Somali has grown to love him like a father, he's quickly trying to get her to the humans before he decays, and she doesn't know that he's actually facing his end as well. So a little bit of drama added in there as well. So what are your thoughts on Somali so far?
So far it's been very, very sweet and adorable. The kind of underlying with the golem is kind of the only real downer that's going on so far right now, but it's been very explorative, very, very whimsical in what the different things that are going on around them. We've met onis, we've met some weird bunny characters, we've gone into deep caves and in hopes of capturing a wishing flower. I mean, that the amount of whimsical nature I can only really put next to Made in the Abyss, where they just, there's so much fantasy in this world. It's just absolutely fascinating. I could get just drawn into this world for hours on end.
Bunny people. When did you meet bunny people?
Kilka and...
Oh, they're like deer people.
I
thought they were like deer people. That's fine.
I see bunny ears, and they're fluffy.
Big, long ears. They're very fluffy, as Smalley says. No, yeah, I kind of agree. It does have that kind of sense of, it's kind of a mix between Made in Abyss and something like Ancient Magus's Bride. Where it's Made in Abyss more in the idea that it's this constant travel, this constant adventure further and further into the world that this creator has created. But at the same time, it's not as heavy as that as Maiden Abyss is, every now and then it kind of toys with, oh no, there's a danger, and then it's like quickly kind of thrown to the side. I was always afraid, especially with the PV, that this would be like a very kind of dark show that would be kind of masked behind a more whimsical and fun adventure. But it has never really gotten that heavy. Like, they had her getting, you know, sidetracked with this cat, and then you're like, holy crap, the cat's going to eat her. And then it's like, nope, it's done. That was resolved really quickly. So it really just kind of comes down to this constant adventure, and every now and then Somali kind of getting sidetracked and getting in some kind of danger, and then the Golem kind of coming in and rescuing her. So it is a very cute show. I didn't think that Somali would be as ganky as she is, but she is just all over the place. She's very adorable and very fun. Like, I guess it's one of those things where you first see the first moments of the show and you kind of think that she's going to be very subdued, but she's actually very comfortable with the Golem, very comfortable in her environment. And so she wants to explore that environment a lot. So
yeah, to the extent of, no, don't do that, you'll get in trouble. Okay, I'll not do that no more.
Oh, and squirrel.
Then squirrel.
Gotta go chase that. But yeah, it is one of those ones where it's not really, there really is much to really unpack here, because it is so kind of built around these kind of one-off stories, sometimes, you know, multiple episodes, like the current one with the Kikila and the town that they're in, where he's trying to raise up money. It really was like a multi-episode show, but for the most part, it's kind of these little spin-off stories of running into some kind of creatures, running into some Onis and exploring the Golem lifespan, running into Kikila and his family, and exploring the flower that she wants to get to grant her wish. They're very simple stories, but they're all kind of condensed within these really cool little pockets of world that you kind of really want to explore, you want to see more of, and it's so visually enticing that it really does capture that essence of adventure. So if you're looking like a really cute little adventurous show with a very interesting world, it's definitely a good grab. So yeah, Somali and the Forest Spirit. Magia Record, Pull Up Magia Madoka Magica Side Story, or Magia Record Maho Shoujo Madoka Magica Gaiden. This one's streaming on Funimation and High Dive, running for 13 episodes, being done by Studio Shaft. I think it's also on Crunchyroll, but pretty much everything on here that's also on Crunchyroll are delayed, unfortunately. So it's one of those things where if you're okay about waiting a few weeks, you can check them out there as well. But I'll just stick with the listing of the Funimation. So yeah, unfortunate. But yeah, done by Studio Shaft. The source, of course, is a mobile game. The genres are drama, magic, psychological, and thriller. And this one follows Iroha, and Iroha is a magical girl. If you those don't know the kind of idea behind the Madoka Magica series, girls are basically confronted by this thing called Kyubei. They are offered up whatever they desire, some single wish that they desire. It'll grant any wish, and once they grant that wish, they become a magical girl, and then they have to fight witches that are in labyrinths that affect the human world in some way. And so different towns have different magical girls that kind of protect those particular areas from the evil witches. And of course, I don't know if they've really kind of touched on the aspect. I think they pretty quickly touched on the aspect of their little egg that they receive when they become a magical girl, and they have to kill the witches and they kind of absorb that purification into the egg. So you'll have to watch Madoka Magica to get the full story behind that. But this one follows Iroha, and she is one of these magical girls. She doesn't know what her wish was, but she does get every now and then quick little visions of some little sister that she had, and possibly the wish kind of incorporating her in some way. But she doesn't really remember who her sister is, and she's trying to figure out what happened to her sister. Was her sister being sick a part of her wish? Why didn't she remember that? And all that kind of stuff. Where is her sister at is what she's currently trying to discover. At some point, one of the fellow magical girls around her tells her about a rumor and also a dream that she had regarding, was it Kamehama City?
Right.
A particular city where this dream basically has a bunch of magical girls that are going to that city. They claim that that city is where they can go to be saved. And so they're kind of going off that city. Kind of find out the hospital and the dream of her sister is at that city as well. So they're both kind of drawn to go there and figure out what's going on there. When they get there, they meet
the grumpy magical girl that all these series have to have, the grumpy magical girl that claims that they shouldn't be here because they're weak and they're just going to get themselves killed, and she's really mean, but you got to have one of those character types in a Madoka series. So yeah, that's basically what we got so far. We met Momoka, Rena, and Toka. No, not Toka. I'm sorry. Kaede. Kaede, Rena, and Momoko. And they help out Iroha for a little bit. And they get kind of... Kaede and Rena get sucked into some kind of... kind of like one of those wonders of a school kind of things, where it's like if you write your name on a staircase, one of them will get taken away if they apologize for breaking up as friendship. And so they have a little falling out between the two of them, and then they have to figure out how to save one or the other. So that was all right. Rena's very, very hyper tsundere. Rena's like a next level tsundere. Like, she's still mean, even though she's got that kind sight. You know it's there somewhere, but she's still mean, but they're still super friends. So it works out in the end. So, yeah, what's your thoughts so far?
Well, and she has the perfect bottom. I mean, she her friend is just the I'll apologize for anything type character. It's they're just a perfect match. This show I love the fact that we're getting more Madoka Magica. The problem with this one is that it's not. It's meandering too much, and I know that we have a lot of side stories to kind of pull everything together, and that's the only reason why I'm still trying to, you know, grab straws to keep watching it. But it does, a lot of these side stories are not really kind of the meat, and it's I guess that's mainly my most biggest frustration with this. Otherwise, it looks great. It's great to have, you know, Shaft doing a Madoka. It's great to just have more Madoka Magica. So that's kind of where I stand right now. I'm kind of in the middle. I'm loving it and kind of frustrated with it at the same time.
Yeah, I think my struggle so far is that I'm not really too connected with the characters. And I think they're kind of introducing characters a little bit too quickly, and so I can't really have a moment to kind of grasp a character specifically. And a lot of the run-ins they're having right now really just involve running into labyrinths constantly.
Yeah.
And so there's not enough time to really sit down and kind of get into the mindsets of the characters outside of them fighting the labyrinths. Or labyrinths? Labyrinthies? The labyrinths. And so I guess that's my frustration so far, is I don't really know Iroha as a character. I just know that she really wants to find her sister. I don't know much about Momoko, but I just know that she's kind of a fun everybody get along together kind of character. I don't know who Rena is besides the fact that she's tsundere. So I'm in that struggle, or Kaede, because she apologizes all the time. Or that Yachio is the meanest girl ever. So I don't really have a moment to really kind of get them as their personalities and who they are. It's just really just throw them together, throw some personalities at each other, go fight your labyrinths. And so that's really my only frustration so far. I don't know that we will get that kind of connection that we did with the characters in the original Madoka Magica series. So I have to wait and see. I don't know that this one was necessarily written by or wrote by Jinro Bucci, but it's more Madoka, and I do like that aspect. It does visually look great, so I think on those alone, I'll probably still enjoy it. But so far, I'm just a little bit wanting more character, I guess.
Yeah,
that's Magia Record. Check that out if you are a fan of Shaft and Madoka. Definitely a must watch. Darwin's Game. This one is streaming on Funimation and HIDIVE, running for 11 episodes. It had an hour-long first episode, so it's technically 12 episodes, so who cares? Studio is Nexus. The source is a manga. The genres are action, mystery, shonen. And this one follows a guy named Kaname. And Kaname, at some point, gets a notification from a friend of his, doesn't really know what it is, but as he's talking with his friends at school, including Kyoda tells him quickly, don't touch that application that he's got on his phone that suddenly appeared out of nowhere. The game itself is for Darwin's Game. And when he opens up the app, a snake jumps out of his screen and bites him in the neck. And then he comes to consciousness, and he's in the nurse's office and doesn't think anything of it. But Kyoda's kind of very shocked by the whole situation. He doesn't quite know why. Kyoda's kind of freaking out about it, but what we kind of find out really quickly later, as Kaname is attacked by a random guy in a panda baseball outfit.
Mascot.
A mascot, yeah. The old mascot bear costume thing. That he has, by opening up that app, he has signed up for what they call Darwin's Game. And Darwin's Game is essentially anybody that joins this, they gain a certain ability and they just fight to the death for points and money and all that kind of stuff. And so Kaname is trying to survive while trying to figure out what all this stuff is and how it works and how not to kill or get killed at the same time. So, yeah, that's basically the gist of it. And he meets a bunch of people along the way, people that he is forced to fight with, people that he forms bonds with. They have a guild system in this kind of game that they have. They have partnerships they can kind of form. And so it's just his fight for survival. And then we got into like a kind of event thing where 300 people that are part of this Darwin's Game all got teleported to a specific area, and they're all being forced to kind of collect rings. Otherwise, they get, as they call it, teleported, which basically means you die. So what's your thoughts so far?
This one is such a weird show. I don't know if I like it or not. I am absolutely intrigued by it and strangely enjoying myself watching it. And yet I know everything in me says that I'm not going to like this in
it's
the
a
end.
Trap.
So,
it's yeah. a trap.
So take that for what it is. Like I said, I am enjoying myself watching this show, but it is very dark. And I mean, the entire concept is a battle royale, and that's the gist of it. So I am very intrigued by it. The kind of weird abilities that a lot of these people have are intriguing. The how they're all interplaying on each other is intriguing. Of course, there is characters that I like. Take that for what it is. But yeah, it's a very interesting show.
It's a show that's a death battle royale thing. It has cute girls in it that Chris is being intrigued by. This is not going to end well. You know, no, these girls are going to die at some point.
Yes.
Or could they? I always tell them, I'm not sure if it's going to be one of those shows where at some point they just brutally kill off these girls that are, you know, intact and are drawing you in. And then you go, I don't like this anymore. They've killed off my cute characters. But no, I'm really enjoying this show. I'm always kind of mixed on the battle royale shows. Like shows like King's Game really did leave a bad taste in my mouth.
At least that one was, it made no bones about it. And I was able to shut it down real quick.
Like from the first episode, watching people just have to bludgeon each other to death in order to pass the level. Yeah. But no, it visually looks great. I am very surprised this show has kind of kept up the quality. The first episode was really well done, and I was thinking, okay, and now episode two, we're going to start seeing the quality come down. It hasn't really come down on the quality. The visual style is good. The character designs are great. I love Shuka's design, even Rain's design. I love them. It does have a great style to it. The visuals look great. The action is keeping up there. It's not like footable stuff, but the action feels like it has impact. It feels like it has speed. All that kind of stuff mixed in there with the quality of it. So I do like the characters so far. I think Kaname is starting to really grind on me. It does have a lot of
inner dialogue happening. Yeah, he's not consistent at all. He's constantly going back and forth. And I understand. I mean, it's a character who's kind of been thrown into this. But he's already made up his mind four or five times, and yet he keeps going back to being whiny and just stick to one side.
It kind of is grinding on me more in the idea that he's constantly thinking about how this is bad. I don't want to have to kill people. I don't like this. Why do people have to kill each other? Why is this person okay with killing them? And I understand that is in his mindset, and I would probably have the same mindset as well. Like, well, this is kind of screwed up. But at the same time, I don't need an inner dialogue of him every 2 seconds thinking about how bad the situation is. It's like, I can see the situation is bad. So it is kind of funny. It's one of those aspects of, we always dog on adaptations because they don't have all the inner dialogue that the source materials have that really explain the character's mindset. But in this one, it's like, I can almost say you can kind of dial it back a little bit. Like, I don't need this repeated to me constantly. I don't need to see these pauses in the characters, high action happening. He goes to the side and he suddenly has a 5 minute inner dialogue, or not 5 minute, but a minute long dialogue inside of his head about how the situation sucks, because I know the situation sucks. So that's probably the only thing that I haven't enjoyed so far, is just that Kaname is starting to really wear on me, and that does suck. But other than that, I've enjoyed all the characters. I think it's been fantastic. Unfortunately, like, I agree with Chris, even if I'm more open to, characters being killed off and character torture, I do see a sense of this is going to suck if at some point they start killing off these characters that I'm starting to get attached to. But that's kind of the name of the game with a lot of these types of shows. But with other shows, they kind of don't make beefs about it. So you know early on that, yeah, you probably shouldn't get attached to these characters. So, but it's a death game, so we'll see how it turns out in the end. But for now, it's been pretty solid, and I think we're probably a good, four episodes in so far. So it's almost already halfway through it.
Yeah.
So it hasn't been too bad, technically. But we'll see. We'll see as we go along with Darwin's Game. Like I said, I'm enjoying it. It's one of those shows that does the thrill of the action and the thrill of the direness that they're in. That kind of stuff is done really well. You really feel that sense of crap, get around that corner, run down that hall, get away from there, move over to here, and it does that really well. It gets that the edge of your seat kind of action. So that's cool. So yeah, Darwin's Game. Check that one out if you like to torture yourself. Pet is our next one. Streaming on Amazon, running for 13 episodes, so nobody will know about this show because it's on Amazon. Being done by Studio Gino Studio as part with Twin Engines. The source is a manga. The genres are mystery, psychological, supernatural, and seinen. And the director for this one is Takahiro Omori, who did Bakano, Dorada, Natsume Yojincho, and Samurai Flamenco. The series composition by Sadayuki Murai, who did Natsume Yojincho as well, Nice Sidonia, Cowboy Bebop script work, and Perfect Blue script work. So some solid people working on this one. And this one follows early on. It follows a guy named Kenji who works at a bar, has a couple employees named Hiroki and Tsukasa. And at some point, Kenji is doing some work for kind of a shady guy named Tadashi. And at some point, one of the jobs that he's doing, he kind of flubs it a little bit and discovers that his past partner, Yokota, is basically being... His mind has been pretty much destroyed, and they talk him into driving him off a cliff. So seeing his friend being killed kind of makes him question what Tadashi's been doing. And then come to find out, big twist at the end of the first episode, the main characters are actually Hiroki and Tsukasa, the guy that are working at his bar. So basically, Hiroki and Tsukasa, they are people that are kind of known as crushers. And these crushers are often kind of hired by different people to manipulate people in some certain way. This story kind of gets really deep into the psyche of people. They describe how every person psychologically has what they call valleys and peaks. And depending on and how to keep your sanity, you have to have the combination of both these peaks and these valleys. And how to break people is by destroying one of those things and revealing your innermost best moments and worst moments and kind of causing yourself to be, like they mentioned, crushed. And so these crushers will often, typically with Hiroki and Tsukasa, they're not really after that because they're actually okay guys, whereas most crushers will probably want to destroy that, send somebody in complete psychosis and completely lose their minds to the point where they'll just be just puddles of nothing, either mentally destroyed or just kill themselves in some violent way. So it kind of follows every episode. Well, the first two episodes really just kind of focuses on this guy, Kenji and Yokota, who own this bar. And then sequentially after that, it really kind of follows Tsukasa as he still works with Tadashi, even though his partner Hiroki really doesn't like him because they were almost, forced to do really shady jobs. So that is the concept behind Pet. And Chris, your thoughts?
This one, I was talking to Andrew about this the other day, and we were trying to decide whether or not this one we would continue on with this one. And my main thing with this one is I think it's an intriguing concept. The idea of digging into somebody's mind and toying with it, kind of a hypnosis slash just flat out Inception, digging into somebody's subconscious. I think that that is an intriguing idea. The unfortunate part about this is where I see this one going. Unfortunately, I only see it tapped out in the next few episodes. It's the idea of doing what they've done already is pretty much as far as that it seems like they can go. The only way that they can really go much farther than this is probably if they start dealing with shadow sides or multiple personas and stuff like that. Things like that where they can actually start digging into like I was saying, multiple personality disorder or personas or shadow sides where you're actually digging into the darker side of somebody, which is suppressed and stuff like that, where that kind of stuff might be interesting. But even when you start digging into that, you've already effectively played with that with the peaks and valleys per se. And it is kind of frustrating. Yes, I want to kind of see where they go from here, but at the same time, what they've shown me so far is not what they're planning on actually digging into. It doesn't seem like it seems like it's pretty much just going to be, we got a something bad we want to do, and we want to make it to where they don't remember doing it. That seems to be the ambition of this show.
It could be. I'm not going to disagree with that. I've actually really enjoyed this show. Now, I wasn't really sure about it with the first episode. I was kind of going, yeah, so far this has not been that great, just following this Kinji guy and he's doing this job. And then when it started, it ended very abruptly, and I was really unsure how I was going to enjoy this show. In the second episode, they really kind of showed me, you know, the mechanics of the mind that they're really kind of toying with, and I was really surprised by it. I actually really did enjoy how I was confused at the end of the first episode, trying to figure out why Kenji had this sudden change, what is Hiroki and Tsukasa doing? And then you go on this whole thing where it explains how they basically were trying to save Kenji. The Tadashi guy wanted to do something differently, how they kind of messed with Tadashi at the same time. It was really cool. I really liked how it kind of concluded. The following episode is where they finally get into like a second job, so to speak. And that was kind of, to Chris's point, kind of seeing what are the things they can do with this. The political aspects, I wasn't really following too much. The whole thing with the Chinese and the ambassador and all that kind of stuff, I wasn't really following any of that kind of stuff. But it was kind of cool how they, again, took the concept of going into the mind, the peaks and valleys. But then they kind of threw an interesting little twist in there, and the idea of somebody kind of, projecting onto a different person a certain situation that he went through, a memory of his past that he ended up attaching to a different person. And that was kind of fascinating how they did that. So that kind of leads me in the idea of, okay, cool, I'm curious to see what they'll end up doing with this going forward. So I'm not in really the same mindset with Chris as that. I think that I don't think that this show automatically is going to go down either a pattern or possibly overusing the mechanics that it has. I think it does have the capability of doing something more and more and more. And I really did kind of more foresee possibly a story later on where it's going to really involve them being stuck in a really bad situation and having to possibly have multiple things that they have to hit on in order to get out of a really dire situation, like getting kidnapped and really kind of messing with different groups of people in order to pull themselves out of it, but also completely clean slate. Because that is an aspect of it, is that they're not only manipulating people to possibly take somebody down, but also to remove themselves from the scenario. They can completely erase themselves from the scenario if they want. So it's something they did with somebody in the early episodes. So I'm intrigued by it. I definitely do enjoy it. It does get wordy at times. It does get confusing at times. But so far, I like how it ends up unraveling the confusion in a way that I can understand in the end. So it works out. So definitely enjoying it, and I will definitely keep going on with it. It is a complete manga, from what I understand, so thankfully this will probably have a conclusion, unlike most shows. So again, Pet, check that out on Amazon if you... Nobody watches Amazon shows. Who cares? It's like an ongoing joke. Any Amazon shows dies. Dies more than Netflix shows. Keep your hands off of Izoken, or Izoken ni wa te wo dasuna. This one is streaming on Crunchyroll, running for 12 episodes, being done by Studio Science Saru. Sources of manga, the genres are adventures, comedy, school, and seinen. And the reason why this show will probably be the best show of the year already is because Masaki Yuasa is working on it. He is the director. He did Devilman Crybaby, Ping Pong, the animation, The Tatami Galaxy, and Night is Short, Walk on Girl. So that's all we have to say. Moving on to the next show. Inspector. Now, this one follows a girl named Midori. She has a desire to create things. She has a very vivid imagination. She loves to kind of explore the elements of objects and draw lots of things. Often gets lost in her own little mind with the different kind of inventions and stuff. Very inspired by old school animation and the sense of adventure and animation. Her friend is Sayaka, who just seems like a jerk that always kind of keeps her, I guess, on the straight and narrow, focused on some things. At some point, a transfer student comes into their school named Tsubame, and Tsubame is kind of a model, a very popular girl, and at some point, they discover that they all have the same interest, which is in animation, so they decide to create not an anime club, not a movie-making club, a film club, because that was the only one they could possibly do that wasn't done already. Because Tsubame couldn't join the anime club, and they specifically want to create animation. So they get their own little club, and they start... Well, they just basically try to fix the club so far. But yeah, they're going to make animation eventually. And every episode, they kind of get lost in their own little creations in their mind and kind of shows it visually with some crazy animations that's kind of done in a way that looks like it's almost kind of amateurish, I guess. But yeah, your thoughts?
Oh, you suck. You have to dump this one off on me.
Because I have to do all the intro stuff, so you always have to go first. Give me a break.
This one is such a weird show. To be clear, I love how whimsical this show is in a lot of cases. However, it has a kind of a downside. This is one of those shows where when you start watching it, there is an aspect to this that you're going to be, at least me, extremely interested in. And then whenever the other side of it comes in, it becomes kind of annoying. Now, what this show does, like Andrew was saying, these are a bunch of characters who are really, really intrigued by animation, and they really want to dig into that, and so they have a wealth of knowledge involved in all of that, and so it is a lot of fun to watch them discuss the different things involved in animation. Downside, they get sidetracked like you would not believe. They'll get stuck on something, and then they'll do this big old long drawn out weird whimsical adventure. This is kind of where the interplay in this show is kind of defeating. Yes, I will admit that I do kind of like a lot of what they're doing with kind of the more the daydreamy aspect. What they'll do is they get stuck on something like the one of the characters wants to fly, and then she'll kind of come up with this concept of this weird helicopter dress thing. It's weird. And then she'll start trying to fly, and then one of the other characters will say, but it can't fly that way, so they have to adjust it to fly better. And then suddenly she can fly, and then she ends up falling off of a rafter. That's kind of the way the story is. yes, they'll talk about how animation is made for a little while, and then they'll suddenly get off on this random side tangent. This is where the show gets kind of frustrating for me. I love one aspect. I love the other aspect in a different way. Putting the two together is actually to its detriment, because one aspect is really negating the other aspect. And the aspect that I'm most interested in is the how animation is done. The daydreamy stuff is really, really irritating me and making me not want to watch the show.
I'm kind of in the meh territory. I don't find the show all that interesting, and I don't find it very entertaining. I do find the sense of, I guess, the design they have of the world. I mean, the structures they're in are kind of weird and interesting. I joked about the fact early on that, like, I just realized the school or the teacher's lounge is in a pool. Like, they walk in there and you can see, like, the step ladder that would go up to the surface out of the pool. Like, it's in a pool. It's very weird. A lot of the designs and stuff of their actual school and home and everything is very interesting in that regard. I just don't find the characters that interesting. I find Midori to be very kind of loud and obnoxious. Sabami's like the middle ground, and Sayaka is just kind of rude and has a weird mouth. I can't get over.
And shoes for a backpack.
Yeah, shoes for a backpack.
Well, Sabami has a telephone booth thing. The actual telephone. It's a payphone. She has that as her backpack.
Oh, okay. No, I kind of agree with Chris. I'm struggling with the show because, one, I find it kind of boring. I do like every now and then kind of seeing their take on different aspects of animation. I think it's very light in that regard. I've seen a lot of people going, if you want to learn more about animation, how it's made, check this out. I'm like, it's very light. I wouldn't really say it's going to teach you anything. If you want to be taught something, check out Shirobako. It's an incredible show. But no, I don't find the characters that interesting so far. It's a struggle for me to watch it. The kind of tangents they go on whenever they want to draw up something and the mind starts running. I get how fun and whimsical that is. I just oftentimes feel it's a little bit too wordy, having to over-explain little integral things about the craft they're going in or they're wanting to design, and then going into some kind of overly animated, not really, I wouldn't say overly animated, but very well disguised, overly animated kind of stuff to show them running off in an adventure on a flying machine or something like that. I don't know. Like you were saying, I really didn't want to talk about this show. That's really because I know the director is very well beloved. I've never really liked most of his work. I didn't like Devilman Crybaby, even though I loved a lot of the animation in there. Just didn't like the style of the animation. Ping Pong Club, I love the animation of it. Didn't like the style of it. So I really am probably the worst person for you to listen to on first impressions for this series, because I'm not a huge Masaki Yuasa fan. So if you like his work, please go watch this show. Don't listen to me. But as it stands now, just really not liking this show. A lot of the time I'm bored. Other times I'm kind of intrigued by his design and the world that he creates and some of the kind of more explorative stuff that he does with the characters and the mind being wandering off. But that's my take on it. So, yeah, let's keep your hands off Yuzuken. It's funny because it's one of those shows where I wonder if, like, at the end of it, they get to, like, the point where they have to put their film up there for the show they're doing, and they have nothing done.
Yeah.
Because they literally, even though it kind of shows them wandering off of their mind, have you ever seen them touch a paper?
Actually, yes.
Just that
one. The last episode they did.
They edited a windmill animation, but that was...
That was that, and they also did the... where they were drawing on the window for the girl.
They drew a concept art that wasn't drawing animation.
No, I didn't say they actually animated it. I said that they were trying to.
Yeah. They want to draw the girl that takes down the tank.
Mm-hmm.
But they haven't drawn much yet. And Spectre is our next one. or Kyoko Suiri. This one is streaming on Crunchyroll, running for 12 episodes, being done by Studio Brainspace. Sources of manga, genres, comedy, demons, mystery, romance, shonen, supernatural. The director is Keiji Goto, who did Kitty Grade and Inride. Series composition by Noboru Takagi, who did Da-da-da-da, Bakano, Golden Kamuy, Koroko no Basuke, and Sankure. And the creator is Kyo Shiro Daida, who did Blast of Tempest. So this one follows Kuro, who is a guy who... Well, I guess you can follow Kotoko. Kotoko basically has a fascination with a guy named Kuro at a hospital. And she wanted to confess her love to him, but then realized that he has a girlfriend named Saiki. And through talking to the women, that the nurses that work at the hospital, because she was in the hospital too, she discovered that Kuro and the Saiki girl are eventually going to get married. They're already engaged. And then at some point, he discovers that they broke up. So she can finally go confess her love to Kuro, because sometime a long time ago, they kind of, she saved his life, quote unquote, and then became, you know, in love with him. So the kind of goofy thing is, you find out that Kuro broke up Kuro and Saiki had a falling out because they were out next to the river at some point and ran into a kappa, and the kappa scared them, and Saiki basically said that he kind of was terrifying and then left him. So jump forward, we now have Kotoko confessing her love to Kuro, wanting him to help her along with all these other things that she's doing. We come to find out is that Kotoko is kind of...
goddess of wisdom of spirits?
Yeah, kind of designated as the mother of these spirits because she's supposed to protect them. So she made a pact with them, lost her leg and her eye, and now she can speak to the spirits and helps them with issues they have. And so she's constantly trying to drag him along with her, kind of find out most of the spirits are terrified of him because of this secret that we kind of unreveal later. But yeah, so it's kind of a solve the mysteries of the spirits and keep peace in the spirit world that collides with humans. So your thoughts?
I really enjoy this show. I love the characters. I love the concepts. I love the little stories that they have. We spent the last few episodes discussing a weird happening involved in a swamp and the guardian of that swamp, and why the trying to explain to the spirit of that, or the guardian spirit of the swamp, why a human did something so evil to her swamp. And it was really kind of a fun little banter between the two characters. So I do enjoy the way that this show is kind of just not, it's not a high speed. It's just a lot of banter between a lot of different characters. There is some kind of, light action, but I wouldn't really necessarily call this an action show. It's just kind of a consequence of something ends up happening, and so they have to deal with it. But I do. I really enjoy the characters. I think that's really my biggest draw to the show is the characters, and just a lot of fun in the interactions.
Yeah, I think this show, a lot of the... I really did, based off of, like, the art and everything for it, I thought it was going to be, like, a high-action show. Like, I figured this Kotoko girl was going to be, you know, enlisting this Kuro guy because, I don't know, he somehow turns into, like, a super spirit demon or something like that and fights bad things. It really just came down to the fact that his body apparently is poisoned to these spirits, and they had one demon bite his arm, and it grew back, but the demon died. And so everybody's afraid of this guy because I think he's terrifying and can end the lives of these spirits. So they all fear him. And so it didn't really turn anything action. I mean, they technically now have this kind of psycho maiden chick that runs around and attacks people. And that could probably get a little bit more actiony, but so far it really has been more dialogue heavy than anything. Now I will say I love the first episode. I love the recent episode, segments of the recent episode. The spirit of the lake, I wasn't really that hot on. I thought it was just a little bit too wordy. The way that they explained the story about this lady who dumped the body in the lake, it felt like they were trying to tell a story and then try to re-explain the story and then re-explain the story. So it was kind of a, just get to the point and explain the story. Why are we constantly questioning it and going back into it? It was okay. It wasn't terrible, but it wasn't the most intriguing and interesting thing. I do think a lot of my ability to go through something like that was probably because I like Kotoko as a character. I love her design. I love the way that she speaks, that she has her own little kind of verbal aspects to her speech. How whenever somebody asks a question, she immediately answers with a yes. She does have a quirk to her already that makes her really kind of a standout character in the seasons already. Other than that, it looks visually good. I like how it looks visually. The character designs are great. Everything about the show is just really working for me. I just hope that we don't really kind of have a lulling point that they did with certain segments of the lake and explain that story multiple times. Other than that, everything's solid in it. So definitely looking forward to more of it. Love the recent reintroduction of Saki and Kotoko explaining that she's now with Kuro, almost like a little flex that she decided to do to her. I'm really kind of intrigued to see how that chemistry works out. Now Saki being a police officer and Kotoko basically rubbing her relationship with Kuro in her face. So good stuff. I am enjoying it. So looking forward to more. That's Inspector. Moving on, Nekopara. No, not the lewd visual novel, the TV series. Nekopara running on Funimation for 12 episodes. The studio is Felix Film. The source is, of course, a visual novel. Genres are comedy, romance, and the director is Yasutaka Yamamoto, who did Hinamaru Uzumo and Servant X Service. And this one takes place in a cafe run by a guy named Kasho. And Kasho basically takes in different cat girls, because apparently in this world, cats are basically, you know, anthropomorphic humans, and they all have to have a master, and when they have a master, they get a bell, and the master can take care of them. So he kind of brings in a lot of cats that have no home and takes care of them, and they serve food and stuff at the cafe that he runs, so it's basically it. Just cute girls in a cafe saving stray kittens and eating fish and not wetting themselves. Yes. Thoughts?
This show is adorable. This is the thing. It's one of those kind of more kickback. I mean, the level of drama that you're going to get in this show is Chocola trying to hide a stray kitten that she brought into the house. That's your level of drama of this show. So,
well, and trying to use the restroom, but somebody else is in there already.
So this show, not high drama, just goofy girls doing goofy things, and watch them be silly. And it is a lot of fun to watch. And it is what it is. It's cute and fun and adorable.
Just to get weirdly deep on this entire discussion, I am kind of fascinated by the levels of which the writer basically creates what is essentially they're supposed to be cats. So every now and then they kind of hit on the idea of like, oh, well, this one isn't potty trained yet. Or this one, you know, there's aspects of like the kid on the train was like, oh, look, those cats are out here without their master. And she's like, oh, that's because they're wearing bells, because they're really good. And so they're allowed to leave without their master. And it's like, they're like literally supposed to be literally cats. They're not supposed to be like, you know, humanoids or anything like that. So it's kind of fascinating in that regard. But it is overall, the show is very cute. It is not entertaining as much as I was hoping it was going to be. I was really hoping that they would have a writer in here that would really kind of create some stories that have a lot of fun and good punchlines. But most of there's not really much comedy here that I'm really grabbing onto. Most of it's kind of just, you know, circumstances, you know, franticness the characters have, like hiding the kitten or thinking the kitten flushed down the toilet. Actually, that was kind of funny. So there's some good moments in there, but overall it is kind of a very laid back show. It is very very close to Yashike, if you can have hyper Genki characters in a Yashike, which I don't think typically, but yeah, if you're looking for a laid back show, cute cat girls, it's definitely a good pick for you. No, this isn't the visual novel. You're not going to get sex stuff in here. You're not going to get even close to ecchi stuff in here. It's very, very PG. So that's a surprising aspect of it. I was really thinking that even though I know that they weren't going to do adult content in there, I was really kind of expecting them to hit on ecchi at least, which is very surprising to me based on its source material that you wouldn't at least have ecchi. Not that I need it, but that was a surprise that it doesn't even have that in it. So if you're wondering like, oh crap, I've heard that's a lewd visual novel, don't worry about it. It's not really hitting anything even close to ecchi. So it's a very PG show, which is surprising to me, but that's what it is. So yeah, Nekapata. Next one is ID Invaded. This one's streaming on Funimation, running for 13 episodes. Studio Naz is working on it. The source is original. The genres are mystery sci-fi. The director is Ai Aoki, who did Aonoma Zero and Fate Zero. The script is being done by Maijo Ootaro, who did The Dragon Dentist. And this one, I'll explain this. I guess get your mindset into something like Psychopass. The concept of being able to kind of detect weapons that detect people's intent to kill that they can use to take down a bad guy or find a bad guy. Essentially, in this world, this organization has created a way of tapping into the minds of criminals. Essentially, when somebody does a crime of some sort, if they can find what they call cognition particles left behind at the crime scene, they can then use those cognition particles to create what they call is a well. And this well is kind of a portal into the mind of a criminal. And so they send a pilot into this well, and which allows them to dive into the subconscious of a criminal. Then they can kind of figure out through different signs within that world where the criminal is at, so they can then send people to go find them in the real world, not the cognitive mind. So, we follow basically Sakaido. Sakaido is what they call a pilot. And the pilot is the person that they inject into this well. And when they're injected into the well, they don't know anything about themselves. It's almost like they get a clean slate. They have to figure out why they're there. Usually what this guy does is he will find the corpse of this girl named Karu, who is always dead in this world. And he discovers this corpse, kind of claims that, oh yeah, I know who you are, you're Keru. You're the person I'm trying to find out who killed you, and I'm a genius detective. And that's the persona he kind of creates every time he goes in this world, and then he tries to figure out anything he can in this world to unravel the mystery of where the criminal's at. So yeah, I hope I explained that well. That's kind of where I'm getting with this show. It is kind of deep in that regard. It's a little confusing at the beginning. It kind of opens up right off the bat with him being in this subconscious well, a bunch of people staring at the well, bringing up data and information about people that are within the well, just to figure out who this bad guy could be looking at the time. Because say if the bad guy bumps into somebody in the real world, that person can end up in the subconscious well, and they can go, oh, that could be where he's at. Go find him. Or they can find an object that could point him to the direction of where the bad guy's at. So it is kind of weird in that regard. Very so much, like I said, something similar to Psychopass, at least half or so that I've watched of the season, of the first season of Psychopass, it kind of feels that same same element. Kind of a game of cat and mouse with this subconscious mind that people are diving into to kind of discover where they're at. The underlying story is there's this guy named John Walker that the organization itself is desperately trying to track down. He's this evil criminal that they've been trying to track out for a long time. At some point, this perceived John Walker pops up in the first guy's subconscious mind, so that kind of is a mystery in itself. So the other aspect is that Sakaido is actually a criminal. because they claim that the only people that can go, that can pilot and go into this well are people that have killed somebody. So obviously he has done something bad in the past. He is a criminal. He is locked up after every time he does a dive. And he has a very tragic past with his daughter and wife, which here recently in the recent episode I've been watching was very gruesome. But that's a sub-story as well. It's, I guess, trying to figure out what happened with his family. So, yeah. It can get kind of wordy at times, sometimes kind of confusing. But so far, I'm really loving it. Of course, I am a huge fan of Io Aoki, so he kind of worked for me. But it's very intriguing so far. Very creative world they've made. And the little mechanics they're dealing with so far have been pretty clever. I love the kind of twist that they made with one of the characters in the first well that he was in, and how they kind of threw her into it was kind of a little trip too. So we'll see if it keeps up. I just read, even though I claimed that I always give it to you right off the bat, I went right into that. So what's your thoughts on Idea of Hayden?
No, you did.
It was because I had to explain all that stuff and I kind of thrown myself into it as well. So
this show, it looks good. It's very intriguing in the way that they've designed it. But like Andrew had said, it's kind of wordy, and it did kind of just get to the point where it was like, although I respect what's going on in there, it was kind of one of those things that it became very apparent to me quickly that it's probably not going to work for me. And as the show continued on, I do appreciate it for what it's trying to do, but I'm just not really feeling it right now.
That's ID Invaded. Definitely enjoying it. We'll see how it goes going forward. I'm always afraid of Nas too, because we've had Nas do some really cool stuff, but they seem to stumble. So hopefully with this one having a really predominant director behind it, hopefully they get the funding they can have to keep it going solid all the way through. So Toilet Bound Hanako-kun, or Jibaku Shonen Hanako-kun. This one is streaming on Funimation and Hulu, running for 12 episodes. Made by Studio Lurch, sources of manga, genres are comedy, supernatural, school, shonen. And this one, the director is Masaomi Ando, who did Hakume to Mikochi, Astro Lost in Space, and Scum's Wish. So expect lots of manga panel pans and weird art style, because that seems to be his thing. So, yeah. This one follows a girl named Nene. And Nene is deeply in love with some guy that she bumped into and wants to enlist the help of Hanako, who is the kind of one of the seven wonders of this school that she's in. They claim that if you go to the old school building, go into the girls' restroom and call for Hanako-kun, he will come out. Well, they actually thought it was a she at first, but we come to find out it's a he. He will come out and he will grant one wish. And so she tries to get him to help her. But then come to find out that, yeah, he does kind of need some kind of payment to do some kind of wish. And he decides that, no, you don't really want to do that, but I'll try to help you out anyways. And so he tries to help her out. And shenanigans happen after that point. So they run into different spirits, different wonders of the school, different spirits and stuff that can cause harm. They do kind of have one thing that I'm curious will continue throughout the entire series, which is Hanako at some point enlists Nene to help alter the rumors in the school, because the spirits in that particular school, if people make rumors that something will steal things and then eventually capture somebody and kill them, that's what that spirit will end up doing. And so he kind of asks her to change the story. That way the spirits themselves don't feel the obligation of acting out the rumor.
Yeah.
Which is kind of weird. And I thought that was kind of an interesting thing. They haven't really done anything with it yet, but they did with the original thing, but I'm curious if that will be an ongoing theme throughout the entire series. They kind of went off onto another wander, so I didn't really see if that was going to be a per episode aspect, but
she did mention it, that she apparently has to tear them apart or something like that, and so she's going to go ahead and follow through with that. But they didn't continue on the, well, if I change the rumor, it will change the aspect.
I don't know what to talk about, so go ahead.
No, she the second spirit that you're talking about. She said that towards the beginning of when they first interacted, and then but they didn't actually say anything about changing the rumor.
Gotcha.
But as far as I'm actually strangely loving this show. I like the cute, kind of creepy aspect of these characters. Hanako-kun's voice absolutely kills it. I love the way he is just this kind of mischievous way that he talks to Nene or Kao or whatever have you. It's just I really, really enjoy the show in general. I kind of wish it wasn't as dark as it is, but that's kind of the how this show is kind of leaning. They feel more like mischievous spirits, but they do kind of go into darker elements to the mischievousness, and so take that for what it is. But it is, I do really like it. I'm enjoying the character art. I love the characters. I love the mischievous nature of the story in general. So yeah, I'm loving it.
Are you loving it?
I'm loving it.
Okay. Hanako's Seiyu, I love her. She does a lot of more tomboyish characters. She had one of the characters in Land of Lustrous. Really love her Seiyu, or love that Seiyu who is voicing Hanako. But no, I do think that she does definitely take Hanako to a whole nother level, does really amplify that sense of mischievousness. I think Hanako just gets a really huge kick out of teasing Nene. Just putting her in really difficult situations just for the thrill of it. But I do absolutely love the art style. At the same time, I do think that Masaomi is going a little bit over the top with the whole comic manga panel thing. There's sometimes I kind of wonder if it's just a slideshow. It does feel very manga 2.5-ish, if you've ever seen those things where they have a video where they kind of make a manga look like it's more of an animation by moving stills and stuff around. I just kind of feel sometimes like I don't have a full animation happening, even though I really love the art style of the characters and the environments that they're in. When it does move, it does look great, but that's my only struggle, is that I really don't like how over the top the director's going with this particular one. I didn't like it so much in Scum's Wish, but they toned it down. With this one, it seems like he's taken it too far, to the point where I want to watch a show, not a manga. So that's an ongoing thing I've had with that director, so don't take that for too much. But other than that, I do love the style. I do love the story so far. Sometimes it feels like it lulls, but other times I do think it's a fantastic show, especially when you have Hanako really pushing Nene more than she really wants to be pushed. And I'm kind of curious as to what else they'll do with the series itself. Like I said, going the aspect of manipulating rumors and spirits and the wonders of the particular school, if they're doing kind of fascinating stuff with that one. I'm not so bothered by how dark it gets. I think it never really gets to the point where it's really dire, in my opinion. I think it's just the stories. The sense of that there's possibly something really dark happening, but it never really is as dark as you think it is. So it hasn't really bothered me in any way, shape, or form. But yeah, great style. Okay stories. Great character interplay. So it's got the characters. It's got the art style. Doesn't have the animation. Doesn't have really compelling story overall. But we'll see how it goes going from here. It's got potential. Especially since I really like Hanako-kun. So I think Hanako-kun basically sells the story. So yeah, Toilet Bound, Hanako-kun. Man, we're just like opposite on a lot of these shows, aren't we?
Are we?
Everybody thinks that we agree with each other on everything, and we're kind of oppositing on a lot of them. Buffery, I don't want to get hurt, so I'll max out my defense. Or Itai no wa iya nano de Byogyo roku ni kyoku furi shitai to omoimasu. This one's streaming on Funimation and Hulu, running for 12 episodes. Studio is Silverlink. Source is a light novel. Genres are action, adventure, sci-fi, comedy, and fantasy. The director has two different directors. One of them is Shin Onoma, who did Fate Collide Liner, C3, Bakuto Test, Unhappy, Kokoro Connect. The series composition by Fumihiko Shimo, who did Clannad, Air, Golden Time, and New Game. So yeah, this one follows a girl. I don't remember her real name. She essentially is talked into playing an MMO, a VR MMO, by her friend. And she starts playing the game. Unfortunately, her friend is kind of grounded at the time, so she has to go play by herself. So she jumps in the game, makes a character named Maple. And then, since she doesn't like the idea of getting hurt, as the title would suggest, she completely puts all of her ability points in defense and buffed the heck out of her defense. It goes with like a shield, was it shield bearer class? Shield something class? And then jumps in the game. Now, the funny thing is, of course, in this game particularly, if you don't have agility, you're incredibly slow. So since she put all of her points in the defense, she's incredibly slow. But then she goes out to the field to try to, you know, play the game, do some fighting. She just doesn't get hurt by anything. And eventually she can just kind of pummel things with her shield and take them out. At some point, she decides to go into a cave, raise up her, runs into a big old dragon. The dragon basically can't kill her either. And then she decides to chomp down on the dragon to kill it. And she kills it and gets like some super OP weapon and super OP armor and shield, and then proceeds to become like a kind of a wonder of the game. Everybody kind of rumors about this girl who just completely is a newbie, but is like taking on everybody. She went to an event and got third place, even though she basically just stood there and just absorbed everybody into her super OP shield and summoned a Hydra out of her super OP sword and all this kind of stuff. And then eventually her friend actually joins the game and makes a rogue character. And then they go on adventures together to explore the world and introduce patches because she's so OP. So yeah, that's Buff 40.
This is one of my favorites of the season. I really, really enjoy this. And it's going to be the bane of my existence this season because apparently Andrew wants to tease me every time the show is up. So yeah, I love it. I knew that I was going to like this show when it came out. I love tanks, and having a character who's completely, her entire niche is around the idea of a tank, just absolutely just tickles my fancy in every way. I love the show. I just love the fact, like Andrew was saying, that she became kind of this wonder of a game of the game. So yeah, I'm having a lot of fun with this show.
Yeah. This one, similar to the other OP MMO game, really didn't take long before, well, it's funny because you say a tank character, but she's not really a tank character, because really she has like,
well, she did start like showing some kind of tank abilities.
Yeah, the cover thing that she was doing with Sally, I was like, okay, that's cool, they have like an actual tank mechanic, they're playing into it to help assist her friend. But for the most majority of the time, it's literally her unsheathing a sword and killing everybody with a Hydra. It's like, that's not really a tank. Or her shield just absorbing everybody. It's like, okay, that's it got very shield hero-y for a long time there, and I was kind of dreading that. I'm like, okay, wow, they're building her up to be super tank. She's absorbing everything. It's very shield hero right now. Hopefully it'll eventually get into something that's more interesting in its own right. I did like the whole aspect of everybody kind of gossiping about this girl that's a rookie that's suddenly doing insane stuff with her stat build, and then how they have the actual game patches just to fix how OP she is. So they kind of have, it's funny because you have a lot of these game type shows where these characters will find some niche and break the game, but then they never have like the, you know, the
administrators
going,
is that why she went down on the devourers?
Yeah, they limited her to 10 times.
Okay, I
devouring.
Remember mentioning that, and it didn't register what was going on. But now that I think of it, yeah, she was swallowing the entire cast.
Yeah, and then at some point they introduced, at the same time they introduced a piercing attribute that would go past her defenses, so things that don't cast can still hurt her. So it is kind of cool that you actually have, okay, she got OP, and then you're like, oh, crap, now she can basically one-shot everything. Oh, no, never mind. This game actually has, you know, developers that don't want that to happen. So they don't want to have a bunch of Maples running around, so they decide to patch it. So that was kind of funny. I do like the cast. It's a lot of fun. I cringe a little bit with some of the action scenes because they decide to throw in random Sally CGI in there for some reason. A lot of the big monsters are CGI. But for the most part, it doesn't look like... It's not Alpharetta levels of CGI, so it doesn't bother me too much. But it's just been kind of an easygoing, fun little adventure of Maple and her travels. And now I think it was much... It was a benefit to have her friend actually join her in the game, because I felt like Maple alone for a while there was just kind of getting boring. But having that interjection of some chemistry in there, and their desire to kind of just go off on adventures, a lot of fun. It really does kind of give me that sense of old school MMOs and that sense of wander. So I am enjoying it. Definitely looking forward to more. Not quite the Mashu type characters like I was thinking she was going to be, but she ends up being her own little thing, which is always good too. She doesn't have to be a copy of Mashu. There can't be more than one Mashu, so that's it has to be. All right, Bafuri, if you're looking for another, it's not Isekai, it's a VR MMO game, anime. There you go. I don't think I've ever run into a single game that has agility be your actual movement speed, but there you go. It's a thing in this game. Even though they should like never really utilize it much. Like at the very beginning, she's like super slow and she's like, oh my gosh, I'm super slow. And then after that, she's like walking normal. So maybe she built up some speed.
No, she can't.
She did, because she was walking faster than she did in the first part.
Her friend carries her around.
Well, yeah, that, but before then. Next one is Asteroid of Love, or Asteroid in Love, sorry. Asteroid in Love, or Koisuru Shouwokusei. This one is streaming on Crunchyroll, running for 12 episodes, being done by Studio Dogokobo. Sources of 4-comma manga. These genres are slice of life, comedy, and school. And the series composition is Yuka Yamada, who did Miss Kobayashi's Dragon Maid and Watsaten. This one follows a girl named Mira, and when she was very young, she met a friend named Ao, and Ao and her decided to, you know, gaze at the stars, and was talking about the stars, and was talking about how there's a asteroid named after Mira, but there's no asteroid named after Ao, so they made it their goal to find an asteroid and name it after Ao. And then jump forward to, I don't know, middle school or high school days. I'm not sure exactly what school age they're in. I think it's in high school. But anyways, Mira joins a club for an asteroid club, or an astrology club, come to find out that it's actually combined with a geology club. Rocks, basically.
Yes.
Was it geology? But they kind of combine the two of them, so that they have to... They combine the two of them.
Huh? Astronomy, not astrology.
Astronomy and geology.
Geology. Yeah, astrology is the Cancer and Gemini and, you know, fortune telling.
Gotcha. Even though they talk about that stuff all the time.
They did mention it, yes.
I don't know what they're doing. They just look at stars. I don't care exactly what they're doing. They look at rocks and stars. I'm not joining the club. I don't care. Anyways, kind of find out how her childhood friend was there, and she joined the club as well. Oh, yeah, she did, because she thought it was a boy. And big surprise, it's actually a girl. And so they look at stars and try to do things to get more funding and have fun. Because it's a cute girls in a club, astrology, stuff like that, planets and stars and rock club.
Yes,
so there you go,
something like that.
Dots.
This is the definition of cute girls doing cute things. It doesn't really do much more than that right now. I hope that they get around to doing some more. It just does what it does, and it does really good. And that's the Dogokobo in a nutshell. You just kind of just get sucked up into watching what these girls are doing, and that is what it is.
Astrogeo girls. It's an Astrogeo.
Akita Kita Club. Or no, they're doing Akita Kita.
Astronomy Club.
No, it was like the Earth. Magazine is Kita Kita.
Yeah, Kita Kita. Yeah, you got it.
Kirai Kirai.
Anyways, I'm kind of frustrated with this show because it's Dogokobo, so I really want to watch it because I love Dogokobo, it has that Doug Ocobo style. I love the characters. They're absolutely adorable. The animation is great, but not too into the character interplay so far. And there's a lot of characters involved with this entire club. They haven't really done too much to really kind of capture me. I'm not too into, you know, Strami kind of stuff. So,
well, even at that, they're not really digging into it enough to make it interesting. It's kind of just been surface level of, hey, there's stars up there. Yeah, I know there's stars. Why don't we talk about the stars?
No, don't give them ideas. Get like info dumps.
The most that they did in the Geo Club was they talked about silt, basically layered rocks. That was
branded
it.
Branded rocks.
Yeah, and then they moved on. And then they cried because they had to throw away their rocks. That was it. That's all they've done is a couple of constellations and the banded rocks. That's it. They've talked about making a magazine.
Yep. They actually made a comic strip out of the magazine. I thought it was kind of clever. Yeah, it was a cool way of making it to where people were actually interested in their little book. But yeah, I don't know. I'm just not really jumping on the characters so far. Their chemistry isn't really grabbing me. And that really is a huge point that, you know, cute girls doing cute things have to have a cast that you really do grab onto. And so far, they really haven't done that. I'll probably keep watching it just because it's Doug Ocobo, because I always watch all their shows. But
that's the only thing that saved this show. I mean, because Andrew had asked me if I was interested in it, and I was saying, unfortunately, no, it's not really doing anything for me. And
I was like, is that the Doug Ocobo show?
Doug Ocobo?
It is.
Yeah. So that is the only thing that's saving it at the moment.
Yeah. So yeah, Asteroid in Love. Check it out if you're looking for cute girls doing stars and rocks things. Infinite Dendrogram. This one is streaming on Funimation, running for 13 episodes, being done by Studio Naz. So not only am I hoping they won't mess up with ID Invaded, they're doing two shows. Luckily, ID Invaded is not falling apart like Dendrogram is with visuals, but it could get there. Anyways, source is light novel. Genres are game and fantasy. Director is Tomoki Kobayashi, who did Akame ga Kill, Amagami SS 100, Ichigo 100, Utawara Mono, blah, 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 blah. This one follows a guy named Ray. Well, his character's name Ray, I guess. But anyways, a guy named Ray, and this guy named Ray decides to start playing a VR MMO because he, again, similar to the show earlier, Buffery, a friend was kind of enticing him to play it, which is actually his brother. And at some point when he's in the game, he bumps into a maiden named Liliana, and come to find out Liliana gave him a quest. It's actually an NPC, and him and his brother Shu, who's like a high level bear costume wearing character, decide to go out to rescue Liliana's, sister, who's out in a really bad location, like a crypt. So they go out there to rescue her and then bump into insanely overpowered or way high-leveled monsters, and somehow he manages to survive because his embryo awakens, which every person that starts playing this game gets assigned an embryo, and his embryo is a very rare, well, not really very rare because we're running into a bunch of them now, a very rare maiden-class embryo that jumps out and completely destroys these really high-level monsters. So even though he's level, like, zero, his maiden one-shotted like a 250 level monster because, yeah. Essentially, they explain it as because the maiden that they were helping joined their party and the maiden was like 250 level or something like that, the monsters scaled up in the quest to like 250, and even though he's level zero and he's using a potion every time he gets killed, it's interesting because they do have that mechanic where if you die in the game, it like you can't log in for, like, what, 24 hours? So he doesn't really want to die because if he dies, then the quest will fail, and yeah.
He didn't want to lose the lolly.
Yeah. He gets the maiden. Maiden kills the bad guys. They rescue the maiden and the sister, and then they go off and do more venturing. Run into PKers, and then get the interest of some high-level players who end up helping them take out the PKers so that they can travel across the world. And, yeah. That's basically it so far. What's your thoughts?
I don't know. This one is a kind of a frustrating show, mostly on the aspect of it's one of those shows that you kind of want to see do something cool, but it's not really doing anything. It just, as at the moment, it's just a simple MMO. And yes, it does have this weird thing that basically the embryo system, which can be interesting. But I don't know that I see it doing anything fascinating, which take that for what it is. I hope it kind of pulls together, but at the moment it's just, I kind of want to wait a couple of more episodes before I kind of give up on it or not. I don't know what to do with this one.
I kind of explained this to Chris at some point. I was like, because we were going through the list of shows and I was kind of trying to gauge his interest on some of the shows. And I came across Infinite Dendrogram and I said, unfortunately with this one, I don't really see a hook in it. Like I'm kind of technically throwing it into the category of like an isekai show because it kind of has that same feeling of you're just going off into another world. Nothing about the real world has any kind of bearing whatsoever, it seems, to this virtual world. So it does really feel like you're just kind of being thrown into this world alone. And in that regard, I was like, do you see a hook? Because I don't see a hook in this show so far. It really doesn't feel like it's trying to create something like this thing that it could do that's unique that you're going to find interesting. It hasn't done that yet. So far, it really has been unleveled character somehow manages to survive through a 250. They completely made the level aspect of this game completely null and void the moment that his embryo pops out. So if you don't have an aspect of, you know, level difficulty there, what are you going to do to make it interesting? And they haven't really kind of shown me anything so far. So I'm a little bit frustrated by that. I don't know. It hasn't really gave me anything so far. Doesn't look all that great. Characters aren't really interesting. So I don't really have anything really to grab onto with the show so far. It's a unique world. I guess I can give it that much. But so far, nothing really hooking me with Infinite Dendrogram. So, yep. Moving on, we have Seton Academy, Join the Pack. Or Mudenase Seton Gakuen. This one's streaming on Crunchyroll, running for 12 episodes. The studio is Gokumi. The source is a manga. The genres are comedy and school. And this takes place in a world that has humans and animals, but the animals are, like, you know, the females look like anthropomorphic humans, and the males all look like more like animal head, but anthropomorphic as well, whereas, like, all the females got, like, human faces, but they have the, you know, animal ears and stuff like that. And Jin is our main character, and he really hates animals. But for some reason, he's thrown off into pretty much an all-animal school, well, besides one other human, which is Hitomi, which we could probably find out later on that's actually an animal too. But for now, we think Hitomi is a girl, a human girl as well. But yeah, guy that hates animals in a school full of animals, and they have this really strong element of animals wanting to have packs, of course. And he bumps into a girl named Ranka, who is a wolf, and the wolf wants him to join her pack. But ends up kind of pushing her away, doesn't really have anything to do with her. And eventually, Hitomi is making a cooking club, and Jin joins in, and then pretty much a bunch of different really crazy animals decide to join over time, including Ranka, who is the wolf, Komori, who is a koala, Kurumi, who is a cat, and then Miyubi, who is a sloth, who dies a lot. And you can probably say that Feral probably joined too, because she's an overprotective sister. So your thoughts on Seton Academy?
Kurumi did not join.
Yeah, she did.
Only on paper. She's not actually in the club.
She's like right outside the window.
She's outside the window, yes. No, I have a lot of fun with this show. It is so goofy, the random hijinks they have in the show. From a lion trying to woo an Impala, the random student council president is a naked mole rat. It's just a weird show, and I love it. I love the randomness, the crazy antics, the goofy kind of tidbits of weird things involved in just kind of factoids for each one of these animals. The special diet for a koala. This show is just nuts. I love it.
The hyena who thinks it's a boy.
Hyena thinks that it's a male.
Yeah, the naked mole rat that is embarrassed walking around with
clothes
with clothes on because it's opposite to them.
Did the looking at all the characters in actual clothes and they were all clothes. Mosaiced.
Yeah, because that's what she sees. It's goofy. Yeah, just grabbing the tail of the zebra in the middle of the hallway. Don't really want me to tell you, do you? No, you tell me. Okay, sure, I'll show you. It's a lot of fun. I really do enjoy this show, and I kind of mentioned it in our music episode, but I was really afraid of this show because Ranka was voiced by the same girl that did the obnoxious girl from Asobi Asobase, but she hasn't been really annoying yet, and so I think it's probably because she's not screaming a bunch. She's just a loud talker, so that's probably why I'm not, you know, put off by it. But so far, I really do love the entire cast. They're a lot of fun. Has Chris's favorite Seiyu on there for Komori. Really loving all the characters. It has that very kind of, especially with the intro, I do have a lot of feelings of like that sense that we had back in the day watching Hare and Gu. And so that's kind of what I'm getting with this show is that Hare and Gu kind of feel. And so that's been a huge treat for me. Loving all the characters. Goofy animal antics, like Chris was mentioning, the whole kind of goofy out of nowhere information about different animals and how it kind of interplays with the punchline with a lot of these jokes. It was the punchline to Komori was the animal factoids. The punchline to the hyena was the animal factoids. So it's a lot of fun in that regard. You kind of learn something sometimes, and at the same time you laugh. So a lot of really am enjoying the show. It is definitely one of the comedies up there for the, I don't know, what else, what other comedies do we have? Will this be the number one comedy so far?
So far, it really is.
So, yeah, I think so. We'll see when we scroll down for the rest of the shows.
Now I have a silly question for you. Is Ranka not loud and obnoxious, or is the entire cast, everyone around her is loud and obnoxious, and so it kind of tones her down?
No, I'm saying she's loud. It's just that she's not screaming. And the thing I didn't like about Asobase was the screaming. So there you go. Sitan Academy. Check that out if you're looking for a good comedy. This will probably quickly done. Sorcerer Stabber Orphan. It is technically a remake of an older adaptation of it. But essentially, it's called Majutsushi Orphan Hagure Tabi. It's going to run for 13 episodes. On Funimation and Hulu. So far, you basically get a kind of a backstory of Orphan running into a childhood friend of his, Azali, and Azali ends up touching a sword and then converting into a dragon and stealing the sword. And then people call her, I think, the Black Witch or something like that, and they all want to hunt her down. But Orphan is constantly trying to save her, and he does a lot of shady stuff to make money, and that's basically all we've done so far is him breaking into a home and trying to steal a fortune by trying to wed one of the maidens of the household. So, and then shooting down magic bolts that are attacking his dragon friend. We watched the first episode. I wasn't really too intrigued by it, but at the same time, I do know it's a remake, he wasn't really grabbing me, so I might check out some more episodes of it, but so far it hasn't really been that intriguing.
Yeah, it didn't really do a whole bunch for me, but at the same time, we only seen really one episode.
Ishizoku reviewers, or interspecies reviewers, this one is not streaming on Funimation anymore. It's supposed to run for 12 episodes. Being done by Studio Passione, sources of manga, comedy, ecchi, fantasy is the genres. We'll talk about this a little bit more in our discussional, which I'll probably definitely bring up this aspect, but Funimation, of course, licensed it, and then by the third episode, they basically dropped off their site. They made a statement that they respect the creator's artistic they don't want to edit things too much, so they decided to remove it completely from their site. So I don't know if they'll give it to somebody else to air it, but it didn't really matter anyways, because as I was going to mention with our first impressions, I kind of was tempted just to drop it because it's just kind of censored to stupidness. And so I'm kind of glad that they decided to drop it because they're not going to censor it anymore. But at the same time, nobody has it. So you're just, you have to put your pirate hat on to watch it, I guess. So
I'm guessing.
It's a crazy show. I'm kind of two minds of the show, just to give my impressions on it. I'm two minds of the show because for those who don't know, it's first impressions. It follows two guys, Stunk and Zell. And Stunk is a human and Zell is an elf. And at some point they bump into an angel who has been injured, so they have to take care of this, or the angel asks them to take care of her until she gets better so that she can go back to heaven. And they make the offer, well, we'll do that if you take us with you, because their whole thing is that they want to bang everything. And so the whole concept of the show, which is kind of what it seems to turn into in the three or so episodes I've watched, is that it's exactly what it's called. Interspecies Reviewers is where these two guys, they go out to different houses, to different burlesque houses or whatever, and sleep with different species, and then they go back to the bar, they write a review, and they stick it on the wall. And so basically each episode kind of plays out that it shows them kind of in their attempt to go to somewhere, or they're going somewhere. A quick little snippet of them actually interacting with the introduction of the location they go to, and then it cuts back to the bar where everybody sees the ratings they gave for that particular establishment. And then it kind of shows brief clips of them, you know, sleeping with whatever creature it is, and them explaining why they enjoyed it or didn't enjoy it. So it's literally them reviewing it. And they bring in another character, Conshall, and of course they end up dragging in the angel with them. So the angel gives a review as well, which is kind of, they kind of ruin the angel completely. But it's just that basically their thoughts on how different creatures like harpies and stuff do in bed. And that's kind of the joke of it. I am of two minds of this. I do love the kind of Monster Musume aspect, this kind of almost adult, dirty look into how would a different species of mythological creature would do in bed. But at the same time, there's a lot of it that's kind of a little bit boring. So it's funny whenever it does get into that kind of stuff, but it's just kind of just raunchy humor.
Yeah, it is. That's pretty much the gist of it. It's like, yeah, it is kind of funny, but it's like, yeah, but you can't ask for more. That's the problem. Is it you kind of want to say, yeah, but I want more, but at the same time you don't really want more, because that's not really what you're going there for. You're going there for just this joke, and that's really the joke.
To give people a good example of the raunchiness, they go into the fairy establishment, and they have to have their unit measured because it's only going to fit in certain fairies. So immediately,
you watched an episode I didn't see.
Immediately, they go, okay, we're going to measure you. And then they go, okay, well, here's the ones that you can choose. And of course, so certain ones that's in the group, like say the short guy, he has a lot of decisions that he can choose from, whereas like the human guy and has very little he could choose. So he reviews it very badly because he has no choices and no decisions that he can have there. So yeah, it's very raunchy. It's but that's the humor there. But like my point was going to go back, I was going to end up dropping it anyways, because Funimation was censoring it to hell. So unless I was going to watch the uncensored version of it, I didn't really want to care to bother with it, because I knew based off of checking some of the uncensored version, it gets like hentai levels. So I didn't even think this was going to stay on Funimation, even if it did. And if it did, it was going to be like, what was that one show? I think the Student Council one did it too, where pretty much half the show, it was just like a chalkboard covering up the scene, and then them explaining that this is really inappropriate behind this screen because they can't show any of it. So it's unfortunate. Hopefully somebody will pick up the uncensored version. Maybe Funimation will pass it on to somebody else and they can give it a proper showing, but for now, there really is no options here besides pirating, which we don't really care much for doing that. So, well, maybe eventually when if it hits Blu-ray, Funimation might even release it on Blu-ray either. They probably got to the point where the Seiyus were going, we don't want to do this anymore.
Probably.
But we'll talk about that more in our news discussion of it. But yeah, Interspecies Reviewers, check it out if you're looking for a raunchy humor. Definitely worth it but it's up to you if you want to do pirating, because that's all you can do. Hatsune Illusion, or Hatsune Illusion is the Japanese title. Funimation streaming it. Don't know how long it's going to be going for. Studio is Children's Playground Entertainment. The source is a light novel. The genres are comedy, supernatural, romance, and ecchi. And this one is done by creator Tomohiro Matsu, who did Fairy Tale Girls, Listen to Me Girls, I'm Your Father. And this one follows early on a guy named Makoto, who is an aspiring magician, and he is fulfilling the promise that he made to a girl named Hatsuna back when they were children, that he would become her partner. And so he goes back to her estate, where he's going to become the apprentice to Hatsuna's father, but then Hatsuna's father has to run off to somewhere because he has this important thing that he has to do, and so he leaves them behind along with their maid Emma and their butler Jeeves and her little sister Yumemi. And so after breaking some stuff, he is forced to become their butler, but at the same time trying to get along with Hatsuna, who, upon discovering that he's actually a boy, doesn't like him too much, becomes very tsundere. But like I said, they did make a promise back in the day to become partners, and Hatsuna wants to follow in the footsteps of her mother, who was a thief trying to reclaim the artifacts that she created that give different powers if they're used. So she's trying to reclaim them because it seems like they always cause misfortune. So yeah, thoughts.
This show is I am enjoying myself watching the show. I do kind of want to give it a couple of more episodes before I really kind of decide how I truly feel about this show, mostly because it just seems to have just now started, got to the cliff. Effectively is what it feels like. We've been, for the last three or four episodes, we've really been building up this kind of, we know that there's this thing that that Hatsuna's mother and father are involved in. But it didn't really dig into it. It just kind of surface level said, yes, this is this thing that they do here, but we're not going to dig into it because it's kind of a quote unquote family secret per se. And that's kind of the limit as far as we've gotten on that. So far, it's just been an interplay between Hatsuna and Makoto. Now we finally have opened up the story. Now it's kind of almost like I want to see what's past this door. We finally got in the front door, and now we're going to see what's in there. So in one respect, I kind of want to give it another episode or two, but at the same time, it took too long to get here.
I'm kind of the same mind. I haven't really found it really grabbing me. The goofy joke right off the bat with Hatsuna not realizing that Makoto was a boy was kind of funny. I did kind of get a kick out of that. I do agree that it did kind of technically finally kind of open up the expanding of it, but I don't really know that it's going to kind of jump right into it. I think another episode is really going to tell if that's the case or not, if it really is going to turn this thing where, okay, now that Makoto has discovered his artifact, is he suddenly going to whisk with Hatsuna off in the distance and start stealing back her mother's items or not? I don't know. I do kind of feel it's just going to kind of go back to the mansion and go back to school, and then possibly something jumping up that they're going to have to involve with or not. I don't think they're just going to go out there on an adventure together. And for that reason, I haven't really found it that interesting, and I don't think it's going to change all that much. I think the formula is okay, but at the same time, not very intriguing. The other unfortunate thing is that it's not really doing very well in the visual style. A lot of characters looking very wonky already, and it's not even that far into it, which tells me it's not going to probably look that great going forward either. But if you're looking for a boy stuck into house with cute girls and being forced to be a butler and a semi-magical aspect kind of thrown in there, it's a decent watch, but I don't know. We'll see. We'll see going forward. Not really doing too much, unfortunately. But that's Hatena Illusion. Took that one out if you will. Smile Down the Runway, or Runway. I want to say Runway. Runway de Warate. This one is streaming on Funimation, running for an unknown amount of episodes, being done by Studio Isola. The sources of manga. The genres are slice of life, drama, school, and shonen. The series composition being done by Yoko Michida, who did Harukana Receive, Happy Sugar Life, Chaika the Coffin Princess, Lucky Star, and Show by Rock. And this one follows a girl named Chiyuki, and Chiyuki is aspiring to join in with her father's current business, which is for models and different clothing lines, and hopes and dreams of eventually going to Paris and going to the runways of Paris as a model. But unfortunately, even though she has the perfect figure, she is basically dedicated her entire life to it. When she got a nice growth spurt early in life, she kind of stopped growing at some point. So she's like 20 centimeters too short for what everybody believes that you have to be in order to become a supermodel in the, you know, fashion industry. So she's basically told that she cannot do it. She don't even bother trying, but even still, she goes to her father's business on a daily basis to try out to become a model, and they keep denying her, and she keeps pushing. Eventually, at some point, she, while they're doing their whole, you know, what are you going to do in the future type thing at school, she bumps into a boy named Ikuto, who wants to become a actual fashion designer and create outfits for different models and stuff like that. And she realized really quickly that she almost dismissed his desire to become that and corrected herself and decided to push Ikuto to create an outfit for her. And after he does, she basically shocks the entire industry by getting pictures taken of her, which went viral. And then her father had to kind of acknowledge the skill of her and Ikuto mainly. And then it kind of shifts to following Ikuto as he is trying to learn more and more about fashion design. He realized really quickly that he's not as smart as he thinks he is about actually seeming and stuff like that in different designs, but he has a creative talent that a lot of people are already noticing in him. So yeah, your thoughts?
I think I'm going to surprise a couple people. I know this is a little bit premature right now, so I'm going to say this lightly. This one is shaping up to be my favorite of the season so far. I am absolutely blown away by how this show is doing it. I was telling Andrew the other night when we were watching this that the funny thing about this show is I'm getting vibes of Skip Beat for this, and it's really, really weird. I'm almost this kind of as this character is moving into this industry of whatever it is, they're, of course, they're amateurs, yet they're learning quickly. They're trying to get figure things out. They have a natural knack for it, but at the same time, just a natural knack does not make it easy for you. It still takes a lot to learn to get to the level of some of these really high professionals. I absolutely love this show. I think it's doing phenomenally. It looks great. I'm having a lot of fun watching the show.
Yeah, it's definitely a standout for the season for me as well. It's funny because I think in our preview for it, we were pretty much thinking that this could either be a knockout or just a flop. And I'm glad that it steered to the direction. And that's not to say that I'm just saying that it's probably going to be one of those shows that either is, you know, it goes far one direction or far the other direction. Not that every show has the possibility of being a flop or a great show, but I didn't think that it was going to be one of those middle ground shows. I think it was either going to take off or just not work at all. And it definitely is taking off. And I do appreciate its the insights into the industry. I do like how it doesn't romanticize things too much. A lot of the cases they're running into are roadblocks that are, they make sense. Like Ikuto, his ability to kind of create something that just blows people away, but at the same time, somebody tells him to do something specifically with Silk, he obviously has doesn't have enough experience in that. He's gonna stumble. And I do like that the characters themselves are pointing out the fact that, yeah, he obviously doesn't know how to do that, but they're not giving up on him because they obviously see his talents. There's this element of really proving yourself to people, and these characters are slowly proving themselves to certain members of the industry. And when that happens, they realize there's talent there that they can't just throw out. And I do like that they're exploring those aspects of it. All the challenges they're facing so far have been fantastic. I love how they handled the show they had to go to and showing off the 40 dresses. I thought that was a really cool little look into that and the struggle that Ikuto had and Chiyuki's ability to kind of jump in there and kind of tackle the scenario the way that she feel that she needed to, because they're both trying to prove themselves. Even though Chiyuki had kind of a jump start to Ikuto, Ikuto is also kind of struggling in the same realm. I am surprised to see how much focus has been completely drawn to Ikuto. I really thought Chiyuki was going to be the main character, but to my surprise, it really does look like it. I guess, like I mentioned to Chris the other day, I'm like, I guess it's more of a thing that Chiyuki doesn't, she's kind of, her history is her build up to this, and she almost is kind of leaped ahead of him. And so he has a lot of travel that he has to go through for them to kind of keep, to kind of reach the same point to each other. And so maybe that's what they're doing right now, is really trying to get Ikuto to go through all these struggles so that they can kind of get to the level ground again before they, I guess, come together again. I'm assuming at some point the desires to have them both kind of working together, him designing outfits for her, is kind of what his goal was set to, is to make clothes for her because they work so well together. So yeah, it's a cool little take on it. I kind of had a chuckle a little bit on how, I guess, overly melodramatic they were about Chiyuki and her height, and how they were just kind of throwing completely everything out at her because, oh no, you didn't reach 20 centimeters. It's like, okay, that's a little bit over the top, but okay, sure. Kick your daughter out because she's not tall enough and completely exile her.
You don't own the entire company yourself. I mean, seriously.
Well, no, I like that aspect, and I'm sure at some point they'll reveal that he was doing it so that she built her own popularity and didn't become a golden child to a business leader. But so far they haven't shown that yet. So I'm hoping eventually they'll redeem the dad and not make it just me left with this melodramatic stain and taste in my mouth. But that was really dorky. It was literally like a quick, like 10 minutes of like, you're garbage child, get out of here, 'cause you're not tall enough and you'll never work in this industry. Okay. Wait, move on. But it's been a fantastic show. The characters are fantastic. The writing's great. The drama beats, besides that goofy point, it's been fantastic. The way they've been telling the story has been great. There's just nothing really going wrong with the show so far, and I'm glad that it's starting out as great as we were hoping it would be. And that's something that doesn't always happen, but when it does, we're really happy about that. So we don't know how many episodes going for. Hopefully it just keeps going, but we shall see. All right, moving on, we have A Destructive God Sits Next to Me. This is probably another quick one. Boku no tonari ni ankoku hakaishin ga imasu. So I'm streaming on Crunchyroll for 12 episodes. Done the Imi MT Squared, sources of manga, slice of life comedy, school in Jose. This follows Sere, who is seemingly normal boy, who is trying to avoid the overly chinubi character in his class named Kaboto, and a guy that likes to tease him, Itsugi. And yeah, it kind of opened up. I think we've only watched an episode and a half, maybe one episode. It's not too much of it, but essentially the gist of early on was that this boy was forced to do a project alongside Kaboto, who is the chunubi character, and Itsugi, who likes to kind of egg him on. And even though he thinks that he's super smart and this guy is completely distracting him and causing his grades to slip, oh yeah, by the way, they're actually both better in school than you are, and so obviously somebody's doing something wrong. But yeah, it's not really hitting me, and I think it's because I'm getting fatigued with these shows that have the Chunuby boys. I know that I fully acknowledge that if it was Chunuby girls, I'd probably be more into it than I am, but that's just how it is. But yeah, it's just a goofy Chunuby boys type show if you're looking for that.
Yeah, it is goofy and fun, but not much more. It doesn't dig into it enough that I was really all that interested in. I thought that the comics were funny. That was about it.
Yeah, the comics were funny. Making everything into all science stuff into anthropomorphized cute Moe's characters. Science fell in love, so I tried to prove it. Or the next one is Reike ga koi ni ochita no de shome shite mita. This one is streaming on Crunchyroll, running for 12 episodes. Studio Zero G is working on it. Source is a web manga, and the genres are comedy and romance. This follows two workers in a kind of a science research center, Ayano and Shinya. And then at some point, Ayano confesses her love to Shinya. And then Shinra's reply is basically that if you're in love with me, then we should prove it scientifically. So on then begins the ongoing adventures of Ayano and Shinra, along with their co-workers, trying to figure out if there's a possible way to prove what love is and how it exists. So, goofiness happens. Thoughts?
This one's frustrating because I really, really wanted it to work, and it's so not working for me. Every once in a while, there's some goofy thing that they do that is kind of funny, but when it comes down to it, this show gets so lost in the trying to explain everything. It doesn't need to be explained as much as it's trying to do, and it's overkilling an aspect of the joke that's really not that funny. So, hey, I really, really, really wanted this one to work.
This is the same mindset I'm at with it. Is I think Ayano is adorable. I love whenever they get flustered together. It's
the waggy tail.
The character interactions are great. I love Ayano and Shinra and their character reactions. I love Kotonoha and her interplay into it as well. Inna was great. I loved her ability to kind of just step in there and just completely break the scenario because she's kind of bold in some regards. It's just everything in between is just kind of over the top science explanations. It's like it's odd because the joke is try to explain love with science, but unfortunately the science part of it is boring. It's overly explained. They're trying to go into explaining different methodologies and stuff like that within science and how to prove things, and it's like, okay, but go back to the characters. They were funny, and I love watching them. I don't want to watch charts and a bunch of stuff that I learned back in school that I really was bored with learning back then, too. So it's like, if only they can cut out, you know, a half of the show that's nothing but, you know, all this jargon and theories and stuff, it would be a great show. But unfortunately, it's not because all that stuff really muddles it down. I'm almost tempted to watch the show and just skip through all that stuff, especially whenever the bear pops up. I know it's going to be boring for the next 20 minutes. So that's my struggle with it. I'm also kind of hoping that the other character we haven't met yet will possibly throw another injection there as well. But so far, unfortunately, a lot of the humor is being bogged down by just a lot of the unnecessary stuff. So science fell in love, so I tried to prove it. That sounds funny. Check that one out. Big surprise of the season is 22-7.
Yes.
22-7. This one's streaming on Funimation, running for 12 episodes, being done by Studio A1 Pictures. The source is basically it's a group idol group that I think is being head by Aniplex, and they're currently making this adaptation for it. A lot of the characters themselves have already been kind of, they have a lot of music already made for the entire series already. But, yeah, genres of music, if you didn't guess already. But essentially, this follows it starts off following Miu, and Miu is kind of in a dark place in her life. She doesn't feel like she's connecting with anybody. She's having issues at work because she just doesn't connect with a lot of the conversations happening by her coworkers. She's very much an introvert. And at some point, she receives a letter in the mail that tells her to go to a zoo at some point that she's been selected. And she goes there and she ends up bumping into seven other girls. And all these girls all have this same letter to come to this zoo to kind of meet this producer. And some guy named Ao Goda shows up and he walks up and says, "You've all been kind of selected. Please follow me." And they semi-reluctantly follow him all the way down into a dark tunnel that leads into a big, huge underground facility that is seemingly all being controlled by a wall that gives orders, and the orders are absolute. And so this wall essentially selected all these girls to become part of an idol group, and they are quickly pushed into different tests and then eventually form into a group, learning different dance routines and then going out to perform as the wall dictates. The wall says, "You're going to do a quick little interview. You're doing an interview. You're going to learn this thing. You're going to go to this location." Everything is absolute to the wall. The wall is telling them everything these girls have to do to be idols. So, your thoughts?
As Andrew kind of alluded to a few seconds ago, this show kind of came out of left field. It started out and neither of us were really kind of, not necessarily that we weren't hot on it, it just didn't really do much of anything. With the main character, while I liked her, she didn't really stand out that much.
She's depressing as hell. Say it.
You know, you said that. I didn't find her depressing.
The entire first episode was her moping the entire time. Don't tell me it's not depressing.
I didn't find her depressing. I like her.
This is terrible. I'm going to leave.
That doesn't take away from the fact that it still didn't do much of anything outside of that. The other characters that they were introducing were not that impressive.
They're all archetypes basically at the start.
Right. So it was a kind of unremarkable first episode. Second episode, we kind of came in and we're introduced to this stupid wall, and it was kind of really left field. And yet after that, it all started to kind of click into place. And I'm really impressed by how much I have come around on this show. I really, really do kind of want to see what's going on in the future. I want to see where they go from here. I'm very, very fascinated by this. Not necessarily the wall is kind of just a kind of goofy thing, a kind of a niche or a quirk for this show, but it makes no sense. It makes no sense, but
I'm just thinking it's a supercomputer.
It's a supercomputer, whatever. It doesn't really matter. It's just kind of a quirk for this show, and the girls are doing really phenomenal. I really, really like it. How they turned the kind of weakest character into the center for this group absolutely is phenomenal. I really, really like it. I can't wait to see where they go from here.
It hasn't quite became the center character, but sure, go with it. No, I do want to reiterate the Miu. It's weird. Her voice is very odd. It doesn't fit her as a character, and that was what was really jarring with me with the first episode. Plus, on top of that, I really do want to emphasize she was extremely depressing and overly down for the entire first episode. Not that she's not allowed to be a downer character, but just not the fact that I want to listen to it for an entire episode. And then to kind of have the second episode and onward kind of really pull it back into a show that I really was kind of intrigued by was surprising to me. I really wasn't thinking they were going to pull it back together. And it could still kind of get back down in the dumps again, but I think it's kind of over that aspect and it's kind of trying to move forward. As I alluded to earlier, yes, the initial introductions really just kind of throw out, here's all these archetypes, but I do kind of feel that I'm hoping that they will eventually kind of start really diving into each of the characters. I do love the different character designs that they've chosen with the show. I do like every single one of them. So far, we've kind of dived into Nicole. Sakura's kind of just been there for the most part to kind of give Miu a lot of bump. I really did love the scene between Miyu and Sakura in the, what would it be, second episode. It was really adorable. I really did like that, her kind of walking away saying, no, I'm not going to drag you back because I've seen your face and you don't really want to do this kind of thing. I really did like that. And that was that element that kind of started pulling into it more and more. And so I have my high hopes for the show. And I do hope it really does continue on to be a solid idol series, because it was funny because with what little we watched earlier and then to not really be impressed by it and then to kind of come back and give another shot and get grabbed. Idol shows have always been this aspect that I want to give every single one of them a shot. And so to give that another shot and kind of be impressed by it, I'm kind of happy that we continued on with it. So we'll see if it turns into being a solid idol show. But for now, 22/7 looks promising. Really love the piano scene, though. The case file of Jeweler Richard. Hosekisho Richard Shi ni no Nazo Kante. This one's streaming on Crunchyroll, running for 12 episodes, being done by Studio Shuka. Source is a novel. Genres are mystery. This follows a guy named Segi who has a ring that his grandmother really looks gloomy every time she sees it. And at some point, he brings it to a guy, or he bumps in, he helps a guy named Richard. Some guys were beating him up in an alley. And then Richard offered his services to him, even though he charges later, which doesn't make any sense. He said he wanted to repay his favor. But anyways, Seiji gives this guy, Richard, who is a jeweler, his ring from his grandmother to find out what upset his grandmother so much about it. Come to find out, the ring was stolen, and she felt that it caused somebody to end up being severely injured. And so she's always regretted it, and after this whole scenario, Richard decides to hire Seiji, and then different people come into his shop, and he figures things out with the jeweler they bring in, and it usually turns into some big story about the person and their lives. So, yeah, that's the case file of Jeweler Richard so far. I'm not liking the show so far because I really don't like Richard. I think it's more the fact that every time Seiji questions something, Richard says, you're being prejudiced, and it's like, chill, dude, chill. I think Richard's like secretly a jerk, but yeah, it's all right so far. They've technically gone through two stories, and both stories have kind of been a little bit, I don't know, the first one made perfect sense and I really did like it. The second one didn't quite make sense how the actual jewelry really came into play with the story. It almost felt like they just forced these two to run into each other at the shop just to force to decide what happened in their lives. And then at the very end, they're like, oh yeah, by the way, still want to look at this? Yeah, sure. Cause I wanted to use it as an excuse to make my mind up. It really felt kind of forced in there. So I'm of two minds. If we had two stories so far, one was really well weaved together and the other one felt very forced. So I don't know, and like I said, I don't really like Richard. He's a jerk. Your thoughts?
Richard's all right.
He's a jerk.
He's all right. I just didn't the second story didn't much. I didn't care for it. It just was weak. The first one was pretty good. And the characters just are, in general, are not working for me. They're just not. None of them are giving me enough to actually care what they, I don't care what Richard thinks. I don't care what Segi thinks. I don't care.
I don't care what Richard thinks either. Cause I don't like Richard.
Well, I don't care either way. So Richard's not a bad guy. I just don't care.
Yes, he is. Richard's a bad guy.
So yeah, like Andrew said, the first story was kind of an interesting little interweaving of the story, but as far as the characters and their dynamics, they're just not enough to kind of bring this to the forefront. And they're not Moe strong enough as far as, it's not Moe. it's they're not strong enough and stand out enough characters to bring any stories out. Segi was horrible at bringing the stories out of the new character that they brought in. So naturally, you're not going to much care about why she did or did not want a relationship with this other person. It just was – it didn't work. And that's where I'm frustrated with this show. The characters just aren't enough to bring out this these stories.
And Rich is a jerk. The case file of Jewel Richard the Jerk. Next one. If my favorite pop idol made it to Budokan, I would die. Or Oshi ga Budokan.
Budokan.
Eti kuretara shinu.
Budokan. Budokan.
This one's streaming on Funimation, running for 12 episodes. The studio is 8-bit. The source is a manga. And the genres are music, comedy, and shonen. The director is Yosuke Yamamoto, who did Yamada's First Time, Welcome to the NHK, and Encouragement of Climb. Series composition by Hitomi Mieno, who did Amanchu, Real Girl, Arakata Under the Bridge, Flying Witch, and Urahara Medicho. This one follows... I just was not looking forward to saying this name. Eddie. Eddie is a... is a fan of a certain pop idol who is named Mina. And it's essentially the adventures of people who are fans of a certain pop idol group and their desire to go to every single Cham event Glam? They go to and chase them through what?
Isn't it Cham Glam?
I don't even know what you're talking about.
Their idol group.
Oh, Cham Jam.
Is it Cham Jam or Cham Glam?
Cham Jam. I thought it was Jam in there somewhere. Jam Glam? Jam Glam?
Oh, it's Cham. I know it's Cham.
Cham Jam. I don't know.
I thought it was Cham Glam.
Could be. But anyways, yeah. Eddie really loves Mina, who is a back left of the team. Kumasa is a fan of Reo, who is the center. And she has a history, or they have a history together where she was actually part of a previous group that fell apart, where she was not a center. She was actually in the same spot Mina was.
You're right. It's Cham Jam.
Motoi is a fan of Sorane. And then later on, we get to meet Reina, who is Motoi's sister, who ends up liking Mina too. So yeah. The kind of the interesting element here is that Eddie is... Again, like I said, very obsessed with supporting Mina. The fact that Mina is a kind of more reserved girl. She's very quiet. She's in the back left. She's not very well known. She doesn't have a huge fandom. But Eri is devoted to kind of showing her that she has plenty of support, even though she's like always the only person in her line, is the only person buying her stuff. She just goes all out, works long hours in order to get money just to buy every single one of her CDs. It's really cute in that regard, but yeah, so the story kind of plays in two roles. It is kind of a mixture of a very light drama with comedy and just kind of a little bit of slice of life element all kind of mixed together. You do have, you see the side of the people that are supporting the idols, that they prepare for it. They wait in line long hours in the sun and heat, buying memorabilia, talking about different events that they have to prepare for. And on the other side, you get a little insight into this pop idol team as they, you know, struggle with, you know, their fandoms, struggle with different events that they're coming up to and insecurities they may have. So
I have learned I could never be as hardcore as them.
I was mentioning to Chris, it's like, this is one of those aspects where you're not really surprised by certain stories, like where some person that just get disenchanted by the idol they've been following for so long, because the dedication needed to do this is insane, which I fully acknowledge there's people that are like that. And it's kind of scary to think that, yeah, technically, eventually, if they do break off from the group or they decide to become an actor or something like that instead, that sense of like betrayal has to be real because of just how much work they're putting into it. So your thoughts?
I actually really love this show. This has been a happy... I'm not going to say it's a surprise. I think we were kind of...
this was kind of similar to Runway, where it's like, this could be really excellent, or it could fall apart.
And it has been a nice little warm hug every week. I really love I especially really like the kind of interplay between Eripio and Kumasa and their kind of parallel storylines that they're kind of trying to play up a little bit. I really love it. Just has been a wonderful show. I can't suggest it enough.
This has been probably one of my favorites of the season, just because I do love it doing exactly what I was hoping it would do, which is really kind of get personal with the kind of interplay between these two sides of the book. I really was hoping that we would get an insight into Mina and the others with her team. I was dreading the idea that it would be strictly comedy surrounding people chasing after idols and preparing to do events and going to events and then leaving the events and just keeping the idols completely out of the picture. Getting that other perspective on the other side of Mina and her struggle to tell Eripio that she does appreciate what she does, and they constantly fail miserably at communicating with each other, is always both sweet, sad, and funny at the same time. And how it keeps juggling that is really fantastic. So it has been an absolute gem. I have been enjoying it so far. I do hope that it manages to keep kind of going with this. I was kind of afraid after the first episode. I'm like, okay, I hope it can keep this momentum. I hope it can keep kind of changing things going forward. And it seems to be doing that so far. So I'm hoping it will continue that way. But it has been really cute so far, and I've been enjoying it a lot. So yeah, doesn't want Eddie to burden herself, even though she constantly does. So yeah, that's if my favorite pop idol made it to Budokan, I would die. Next one, another one we won't have much to say about it, but Uchitama. Have you seen my Tama? Have you seen Tama?
No, not the
same Tama.
Show.
Sorry, not the same Tama.
Not in this show.
Or Uchitama, Uchino, Tama.
It was a big old blur on the screen. It just did.
Shinimasen ka?
I was promised a Tama, and all I see is blur. It was kind of annoying.
This is running for 11 episodes, being done by Funimation, or not Funimation, streaming on Funimation, being done by Studio Mappa and Lappin Track. The source is original, and the genres are slice of life. And this basically follows a bunch of cats and dogs as they bump into each other in the middle of a neighborhood, and it kind of goes back and forth between, it shows them as like very cartoonish looking dogs and cats, you know, messing around, and then jumping back into more of an anthropomorphic style version of those cats and dogs doing different things. The main focus of the early episode was just that Tama ran off and everybody was trying to band together to try to figure out where Tama went, and then eventually the mystery Nora popped up and helped find him and take him back home. So it's kind of cute, but at the same time, it's one of those shows where a lot of its appeals on the cutesiness of the characters and a bunch of cute boys doesn't really get me too much. So it does kind of lose a lot of points in that regard. There was a few funny points in there, like the fact that everybody was stealing the dog's food and how the dog fell in love with the cute Momo, the idol of the neighborhood, was kind of funny. But for the most part, it's just kind of
dogs
cute.
Don't fall dogs in cats. Love with cats. That's just sacrilegious.
There you go.
No, it's cute. I do kind of want to go back and watch a couple more episodes to see what they do with it. The main problem with this show, for me at least, was that it seemed like they were trying a little bit too hard. But other than that, it was just cute and fun and just animals doing silly things, and they're just anthropomorphizing it, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, and random service announcements for people, like knock on your car hood before you turn on the car.
Yes, that was an interesting little tidbit for people.
Oddly out of nowhere.
Well, people don't really think about that, so.
Oda Cinnamon Nobunaga is the next one, streaming on Crunchyroll, running for 12 episodes. Studio Signpost. The source is a manga, and the genres are slice of life, comedy, historical, seinen. And this follows Oda Nobunaga. Yes, another Oda Nobunaga, sir. But he dies and then is transported into the body of a dog. His name is Cinnamon. And he is taken care of by his owner, Ichiko Oda. and he later bumps into many other reincarnated, you know, people that he had known back in his time that are different dogs. And so, yeah, they talk about history a lot. Do you want to start or do you want me to start?
There's not much to say about this one. I kind of wish this worked. I don't know what would make this show work. I understand what they're trying for, I think. Trying to kind of make this into a how would Nobunaga see himself as a dog. That's what they're trying for. Can you save it in any way, shape, or form? I don't know. If you like this, more power to you. It's just not, it doesn't capture the cuteness of dogs per se. It doesn't capture the irony of Nobunaga in a dog form. It just doesn't, the interactions of the characters, they kind of play up some stuff that goes into drama involved in the past life, but it doesn't work in what they're trying to do. So it just never really captures anything well. And that's really my frustration with the show.
My frustration is more in the idea that, yeah, I was really looking forward to this one because it just, the thought of Oda Nobunaga becoming a dog is hilarious. But my struggle really comes in. I think what they're going for with this show is, essentially, a lot of the humor seems around the fact of the history of Oda Nobunaga. So I think the people that do know a lot about Oda know about all the people that he fought alongside, all the people of his family, all of these warlords would probably get a huge kick out of this. But I think the problem with me watching it is, yes, I do know a little bit about Oda Nobunaga. I don't know much about the people around him. And so when a lot of the humor is like, well, this person betrayed me because obviously this, it's hard for me to really get the punchline when I don't really know too much about that, and why them explain it the way they explain it is funny. So I think huge Oda Nobunaga fans are probably going to get a huge kick out of this. I'm sure that most all of Japan would get a kick out of this because they all know plenty about him. But unfortunately, my little knowledge of him really does make me struggle with this because a lot of the humor is referential to his past. Very little of it is current times or circumstances he's running into. I think the only ones I've really got is, yeah, seeing him, you know, struggle with the fact that he has these dog tendencies that he can't fight is funny. Watching him get mad about the girls playing the gacha game with the weapons turn into different humans and look all handsome like a gacha game was hilarious. Him saying, oh, yeah, why does that sword hate me? I used that sword for a long time. Oh, yeah, that's right, because I discarded him to give him to somebody else. So obviously he hates me. So all the swords hate Oda Nobunaga, and he was frustrated by it. But other than that, all the rest of the humor just wasn't connecting. And I think it's, like I said, because I don't have enough knowledge about him. So if you have a huge amount of knowledge of Oda Nobunaga, you're probably going to get a huge kick out of it. Or I would even struggle to say, if you like just cute dogs and want to see shenanigans, you're not going to get much out of this because a lot of it's just them sitting there talking to each other. It's not much like a dog doing something goofy. There's a few points, but it's very, very, very few. So that's Oda Cinnamon and Nobunaga. That'll be probably my top list of most disappointing shows. But like I said, it's not because the show is bad. It's just because I think a lot of the humor just doesn't. It requires a lot of knowledge about Oda Nobunaga. So there you go. Show by Rock. Mashu Maireshi. Maireshi. Mashu Maireshi. I got that one point and I got it eventually. I don't know. Yeah, Show by Rock. This one is running on Funimation for 12 episodes. Being done by Studio Kingdom and Citrus. The source is a game, and the genres are music and comedy. This follows a girl named Hoan, who has been selected for an audition in Medi City. And for those that don't know, Medi City, for the original Show by Rock, is the city that everybody went to in order to become rock stars. And so she leaves behind her home out in the boonies and goes off to Medi City, and then quickly loses her audition sheet, but then meets three band members who are part of a group. Surrounded by Himeki, who is the daughter of the head of the record label that she is now under, I guess. Delman and Ruhuwa, I never realized how difficult their name was to say. Ruhuyu. And these three end up taking Hoan in, and they, I would assume, are going to make a group. But so far, we haven't gotten that far. So far, it's basically been Hoan playing a game with, or a band with them, or playing a song with them. And then eventually, Himeko, who is the lead of the group, seeing Hoan out in the middle of nowhere in the night in a tent, and then invites her to become a roommate of her because she makes good food, and them playing music together. So it's very cute so far. I do feel like it's trying to hit a lot on the old nostalgia of the original Show by Rock group with like Cyan and that little bit of Yuri tension in there, cute Yuri tension, but it's been visually cute so far. Some goofy antics with like Ruhuyu trying to figure out who killed the master because he had hot sauce. Obviously not dead, but nothing really spectacular so far. I'm just kind of hoping that it kind of catches that same, because the original Show by Rock technically didn't start out great either. So I'm hoping eventually we'll get some solid chemistry built with the characters. And at this point, we just watch Show by Rock because it's Show by Rock. We just kind of have to.
Yeah, they just randomly threw the boys in at the end of the last
literally through the window.
Yeah, this has just been cute. I've enjoyed myself watching the show. Can't wait to see where they go from here. But yeah, it's Show by Rock.
The most insane ringlets ever.
Oh, yeah.
Double. You have one that has, like, weird candy swirl and one that's, like, gigantic tubes.
I don't hate it, though. It's been... I don't hate it. I can't hate it. I don't know why.
What, the ringlets?
Yeah.
Oh. I was trying to remember
the name of the girl. At first, I was like, I don't know. No, I don't hate it. I kind of like it.
No, I'm fine with it. I think she's adorable, so it works out for me. She reminds me, like I said, of that... the other pigtail girl. Is it Eridu? No, it wasn't Eridu. Retri. My gosh. I'm trying to remember her name for like the last 2 weeks. She reminds me a lot of Retri, and her relationship with Cyan is kind of similar to her relationship with Hoan. So I'm getting that Cyan Retri thing again, which I did love with the original Show by Rock. So yeah. Isekai Quartet 2. It's done by Studio Puyokai, still being on Crunchyroll and Funimation, running for 12 episodes. Again, I think that's another one that has a delayed on Crunchyroll, which sucks, but it is what it is. Been okay so far. I'm not going to say it's been kind of knocking it out of the park so far. We did have the introduction to Naofumi and Raphtelia and Philo to the shenanigans of all these other isekai people in a school. But yeah, it's just been okay so far. I don't really think that it's been too funny.
It hasn't done anything special. It's just what it just continuing on with the same humor.
Yeah. I don't even remember anything about much about it. I mean, like, that was the stealing the wine.
That's the only one that comes to my mind right now. Other than the introduction of the...
Yeah, the introduction was them kind of running into each one of the characters early on. But yeah, just kind of stealing the wine was kind of goofy. But it was technically Kazuma and his personality to kind of betray everybody to steal the wine. He's a jerk. But yeah. Room Camp, again, not much to say. Same with Isekai's. They're short, so it's quick. Beheia Camp is on Crunchyroll, running for 12 episodes. They're like literally 2 minutes each. It's just kind of cute, laid-back fun. I think the only thing I hate about this show, and this is a really simple thing, I almost want to I'm tempted to just not watch this show until the end of the season.
Didn't we do that with the climbing club or something like that? And we found out that we enjoyed it better that way?
I don't remember. But no, what's the thing that you go to? What was the thing about the original Yuru Camp or whatever it was? Laidback Camp. What was the great thing about your Laidback Camp back then? Laid back, you relax, you get into it, and you just enjoy it. So to make that in like 2 minute clips doesn't work. You don't even get enough time to relax. So
yeah. It's
just kind of cute. So yeah, like I said, I'm tempted just to wait until the end of the season and just watch it all at once. Thankfully, we have another season coming up here soon, but right now, it just, it feels like this needs to be watched at the end of the season. Watch it for like, what, 40 minutes, and you'll get like everything out of it. So, thoughts?
Yep, pretty much. It's just cute and fun.
And the last one, Plunderer. Streaming on Funimation and Hulu, running for 24 episodes. This one's being done by Geek Toys. The source is a manga. The genres are action, ecchi, fantasy, and shonen. And this takes place in this? Oh, yeah, every time he tries to upskirt somebody. Yeah. And then, like, her mark being right next to her crotch and them getting all up in there all the time. I don't know. I'm just trying to create something there. But anyways, this takes place in a world where it's kind of a, I don't know, medieval age type period, with magic and weapons and stuff like that. And the weird thing in the world itself is that everybody is born with a mark on themselves, a number. And they have a designated thing that they have to do in order to increase that number. But if they do something else, that number will decrease. And if it ever reaches zero, they'll be attacked by these weird shadowy hands and dragged into the abyss. And so we follow a girl named Hina, and she is traveling across the world because her mother told her to go seek out the, what was it, star hero?
Legendary hero.
The legendary hero? I thought it was the legendary star hero.
No, the legendary hero, and he just so happens to have a star. Yeah, or the legendary ace?
Ace, there it was, what it was, the ace. But anyways, her thing is that she has to walk. And the more she walks, the number increases. So she's walked a long time because she's been searching for this ace. And eventually she comes to this town where she bumps into a guy named Licht. But no, she's actually tricked by a guy. She's tricked by a guy that has a star next to his number. And she thinks that's the ace and gets all happy. And he takes her back to his facility. He's part of this knighthood, and then he basically tries to force himself upon her, and then she tries to use one rule within the numbers that if you have a higher number, you can claim dominance over somebody and tell them what to do, and she has a higher number than he does, but then he somehow turns the tables on him because he's a part of this knighthood, which completely defeats the whole rule that they just created at the beginning of the episode, but that's fine. And then finds out that she has this $10,000 or 10,000, what do they call it?
It's a ballot.
Ballot, which is probably 10,000 numbers you can put on yourself or something, but it's worth a lot and nobody's allowed to actually carry them. So it's actually a crime that she has it. But anyways, he kind of forces himself upon her, challenges her to a duel, beats the crap out of her, takes all of her points, and then the incredible ace shows up and saves her, and then kind of find out that he has a sword that has a ballot on it for like insane amounts, and then beats the crap out of him because he's an ace, and there's like five aces that were part of this big war a long time ago, and they're all stupidly OP because he's literally able to like step on the ground and blow everybody away, which is incredible to have in the first episode, to have a stupidly massively OP character out of the bat. But yeah, that's Plunderer so far, and then he leaves her behind in a teary mess, and then some evil guy shows up and says, "We found the ace." And then talks into an earpiece. Thoughts?
It's an interesting show. I don't know. I'm trying to think. I do like it. It kind of is, well, it does have shonen in the genre list, so it makes sense. It seems like it's kind of building up this kind of a world that they're going to be kind of digging into as and it's going to feel like a shonen, and that's exactly how it came off. I do kind of want to continue. It's at least it's not as obnoxious as Black Clover.
Yeah, but he's equally as obnoxious, though.
He's kind of similar to
it's like constantly running around, shoving his head up skirts and screaming about
what's his name from Seven Deadly Sins. Did the same thing, going around and just obnoxiously grabbing and groping and stuff like that. So kind of like that. But hey, I like it, and I kind of want to see where they're going to go with it. and hopefully see kind of the staying power of whatever this storyline has. So yeah.
Well, I was a little frustrated because the thing that really does hook me into the show is the whole point system. And the thing that frustrated me was that really quickly they broke one of the rules by adding another rule. And I'm like, okay, well now you're just kind of saying, here's the law, but oh, by the way, you can amend it right here and then bypass it. And it's like, well then don't have the law in the system. If you have a system, utilize the system and try to build around that system. Don't start editing it just to kind of fit, oh, well, we need this guy to be really evil, so we'll have him able to break that rule and get around it. That was the only frustrating thing that I had with it. Besides the fact that, yeah, Licht was kind of annoying early on. Well, he's still kind of technically annoying, but he did save her, so it's okay. But yeah, it's interesting. I do kind of want to go back and check it out, see if the next few episodes shows me that they want to do something interesting with that, or if they're just going to do kind of like you said, it's just a shonen thing and just kind of keep it going with this little point system being the only thing that makes it unique to the other shows. So yeah, odd show. I do like the character design of Hina. It's very unique, but yeah, that's Plunderer. It's our last show. That's all of our first impressions. We're finally done, Chris. First impressions are typically long, but I guess it was technically not as long as I thought it would be. So, any standouts?
Smile Down the Runway.
Yeah, Smile Down the Runway.
Ronta.
The Idol Group, or Idol Volcadon, I Would Die. I like that one. Tin Academy, the 22-7 has definitely intrigued me. Definitely going to be excited to see where that one goes, if it can be another solid Idol show to be out there with the rest of them.
Satan Academy, that's what it was. And, well, Bow Furry, but that was...
ID Invaded.
Inspector.
Pet. Darwin's Game. We're just growing up.
And Somali.
So, yeah. That's the thing with the season. It's like a lot of good shows. So, I'm hoping some of them really do peak out and go into something really incredible. But just too many good shows that I kind of am a little bit overwhelmed. But again, like I said, that's another reason why should I bother keeping with Plunderer, because Plunderer is 24 episodes, and guess what next season is? Hell. Next season is hell. Am I even going to have time for Plunderer once the next season starts? I don't think so.
I don't know.
So we'll see. We hope you guys enjoyed our first impressions of the winter 2020 season, and again, we're at TakuSphere.com. You can go there for all of our anime new and old. Great community in the forum links at the top. Social media links on the right side.
That's probably why there's so many shows this season.
And all that good stuff.
It's too many shows next season. Let's make it all in the first in winter.
Yeah, they're like, we're planning on starting in summer and like or spring. And you're like, no. Do you know what's in spring? I guess we're starting winter. Y'all take care.
Oos. I'll make you look way out, way out. Leave it all behind.